from the high desert in the great American Southwest. I bid you all good evening or good morning, as the case may be, across this great land of ours. Commercially stretching from the Tahitian and Hawaiian island chains in the west eastward to the Caribbean and the U.S. Virgin Islands. Good morning in St. Thomas. South into South America and north all the way to the pole and worldwide on the internet. This is Coast to Coast AM, and I'm Phil Hendry. No, I'm not. There is a big breaking story. Matt Drudge has it, and I'm going to read it to you. We have a link on the website right now. I found out about this, as usual, about 30 minutes ahead of airtime, and I'm going to read it to you verbatim. The headline is, Talk Show Wild Man Phil Hendry Eyed for Art Bell Slot. Exclusive. The players involved may not know it yet, but Los Angeles talk show host Phil Hendry is being groomed to take Art Bell's overnight radio slots, the Drudge Report has learned. According to senior network sources, Hendry is being groomed to replace Bell if Bell pulls the plug on his show, heard nationwide on 486 stations. Premier Radio Networks, home of Rush Limbaugh, Dr. Lauren, Art Bell, began syndicating Hendry this week in 34 markets. Hendry, who uses gunzo phone calls from listeners and set up sketches to mock issues and celebrities, has caused a complete sensation in recent years in Southern California. The syndicated Phil Hendry show is airing weeknights at 10, right before Art Bell, whose paranormal talk show begins at 1 a.m. Eastern. Bell is currently doing his coast-to-coast radio program only three nights a week, and top affiliates have expressed disappointment that Bell is no longer a full-time personality. The situation could reach a boil in early 2000. Bell reduced his on-air presence after living through a series of personal nightmares. Bell's son was bound in chains by one of his school teachers who was HIV positive, taken across state lines where he was molested. The teacher is now serving life in prison for the assault. Then we have a quote. Quote, Art Bell is at the top of his game. We want more of him, said a concerned program director carrying Bell in a top five market. It is such a tragedy what has happened to him. We hope he can continue to do the show until the end of time, end quote. I have a feeling that the person not named here in the top five market probably is back in the Northeast Corridor somewhere. That's only a guess. Now, this story, now of course it does say that the players involved may not even know it yet. So that, you know, possibly being the case, I mean, it could always be. Although I talked to the president of Premier Networks about 15 minutes ago, and he doesn't know about it yet. So it is untrue. I have a suspicion where Matt may have drudged this story up from, but it's not true. Now, if you want to read the story yourself, you can, because we have just put a link to it on my website, www.artbell.com. But as far as I know, none of this is true. Now, underline as far as I know. Because again, it says the players involved may not even know it yet. And I doubt Phil knows it. Phil has done a wonderful job, actually, doing a parody of my show from time to time. But he is so completely different in terms of the venue of his program versus mine that I would doubt seriously that would be the case. Plus, logic would tell you that if that was the case, Phil would have been filling in, as some other people, as you well know, have been doing, a whole series of people. So, that's it. What can I tell you? These stories come out of nowhere. And I don't know where you got this one, Matt. Well, maybe I do. But it just, in substance, is not true. All right, We've got a lot to do tonight. We've got Peter Gersten coming up on a R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Company ad that's absolutely unbelievable. And I've got a song I want to play for you. You're not going to believe it. You know, I'll tell you about that in a moment. In a moment. Hey, maybe I should use that for my new noise. Ta-da! So we have Matt Drudge saying all kinds of things tonight. And you can read about them on my website. We have the link there for you. But there's one more thing that I really must do at the top of the program. You remember Waco, right? You remember all the negotiations that were going on at Waco, right? Do you remember all that? Sure you do. You remember Waco. You remember how they continually thought that the FBI was being lied to, and the sixth seal, he wanted to complete the seventh seal, and he would talk about that. And do you remember that they played Nancy Sinatra's "These Boots Are Made for Walking"? They constantly blared that over speakers to the compound. And as you know, I'm collecting oldies but goodies for the period of time between now and 2000. Sort of a long walk down memory lane. And I ran into Nancy Sinatra's "These Boots Are Made for Walking". And when you think back to the Waco tragedy, disaster, whatever you want to call it, some say it's murder. And you remember the FBI was saying, oh, we'll wait until hell freezes over if we have to get everybody out alive. And then I ran across this song today, and I listened to the words of the song, the Nancy Sinatra song, and a chill went right up my spine. And all I can tell you is listen carefully to what I'm about to play, and as you listen, relate it to what occurred at Waco. Listen to the words very, very carefully.
You keep saying you got something for me, something you call love, but confess, you've been a messin' where you shouldn't have been a messin'. And now someone else is getting all your best. These boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. One of these days these boots are gonna walk all over you.
Listen to the words now very, very carefully.
Yes. You keep lying when you ought to be truthing, and you keep losing when you ought to not bet. You keep saying when you ought to be a-changing. Now what's right is right, but you ain't been right yet. These boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. One of these days these boots are gonna walk all over you.
It gets better or worse. Listen carefully.
You keep playing where you shouldn't be playing, and you keep thinking that you'll never get burned. Ha! I just found me a brand new box to match it, yeah. And what he knows, you ain't had time to learn. These boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. One of these days, these boots are gonna walk all over you.
Damn. Are you ready?
Boots? Are you ready, Boots? Start walking.
Now, that blew me away. I heard that earlier today and recorded it, and I sat there and I listened to it, and I thought, oh, my God, they played this again and again at Waco, and you know, nobody ever really played it and listened to it after the Waco business. And the words are pretty chilling, I would say, wouldn't you? In view of what occurred, how it occurred. And they were playing this at the time they were saying that hell was going to freeze over before they went in there with the violence. Damnedest thing I ever heard earlier today. All right, well, on to other things, and I've already taken enough time. Peter Gersten is our nation's only UFO attorney. Filing lawsuits, filing freedom of information requests, and on and on and on, suing, well, the planet, basically. And he's got some news for us tonight. Hi, Peter.
Good evening, Arthur. How are you?
Well, you've been listening.
I've been listening very carefully.
Yeah,
I love that song.
I'm kind of curious, though, when you remember Waco and how it came down and what happened, and then you hear that song that they were repeating again and again and again into the compound. All of a sudden, it makes an awful lot of sense.
And it's interesting that you should play it at this particular time now also.
Oh.
Reflect on it. Because this reality just keeps on getting weirder and weirder, doesn't it?
It does. I know.
And talking about weird,
yeah.
Did you see that advertisement yet?
As a matter of fact, I haven't. But I know, it was a big, what, page or two-page ad?
It was a two-page ad taken out in at least three weekly newspapers, one in Seattle,
yes.
One in Fort Worth,
yes.
And one in California somewhere. Two-page advertisement.
By the R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Company,
on,
huh?
On behalf of Winston Cigarettes.
Yeah.
And what's amazing, I first learned about it through an email, and I thought it was a hoax because it was associated with the Weekly World News, and I think that's a tabloid.
Yeah, that's right, it is.
But I think the person that sent me the email was a little confused on the name of the newspaper. And then I got another email that it was seen in the Seattle Weekly.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, two therapists that work with abductees saw it.
Well, before we go any farther, we ought to tell the audience what it said. It said, basically, the ad said, among, I guess, other things, if aliens... Now, why would R.J. Reynolds be concerned with aliens at all? But it said... If aliens are smart enough to travel through space, why do they keep abducting the dumbest people on Earth? Now,
that's strange, isn't it?
Yeah, let's sit and think about why R.J. Reynolds would say something like that, deriding those who claim abduction, and even talking about aliens, and sort of speculating about if they're smart enough to get here, then why do they keep abducting dumb people? It's not just strange, it's downright weird.
Well, that's only part of the newspaper. The other part is a one-page photo of something that I guess is supposed to be a UFO.
Oh.
And it's interesting, this object, whatever it is, I don't know if it's real, if it's fake, or it's some kind of UFO. I called R.J. Reynolds, and I spoke to the customer service department.
Yes.
And they took my complaint down, and I called on behalf of Cause. And I told them that I wanted to speak to the advertising department.
Right.
It seems they have an in-house advertising court. That's what they told me, at least. Because I wanted to know what this meant. What was the intent? What was the strategy? What was the purpose of this particular ad? They
right.
think they were actually going to sell more cigarettes with this type of ad. And I was told that the customer service would forward the my complaint to the advertising department, and they would get back to me in about 4 to 6 weeks.
In what way is that different than filing an FOIA request with the U.S. government?
Well, it's funny because some people want me to go into court with a defamation action, and we are familiar with defamation actions, aren't we?
Yes, also? We are.
As a matter of fact, you are almost through with litigation, right?
It's winding down, yes.
One down, one to go.
That's right.
Well, best of luck with that. But unfortunately, for several reasons, the statement isn't... the statement could be considered defamatory, but it's not actionable. It might even be opinion. An opinion is not actionable.
Right. No, they're probably going to get away with this. But, the question is, why?
Yeah. Doesn't make any sense.
Why would they do that? Now, The papers you mentioned would constitute, in my mind, a test market. In other words, they didn't do this fully nationally. So if they only did it in three markets, they're testing it for some reason.
I'm trying to find out how many markets it actually appeared in. I'm not sure. They probably are testing it. For whatever reason, alien abductions is becoming more in the public forum. Unfortunately, with this advertisement, it's not in a positive way. It's in a negative way. But I guess any kind of publicity, in a way, is good, and you know, quote-unquote good.
Perhaps we should investigate and find out how many abductees are smokers.
How could we find that out?
I have no idea.
I would say probably about 90%.
Well,
abductees and astrologers.
No, that would not make sense. I mean, if they were smokers, then this tobacco company, R.J. Reynolds, a big tobacco company, would be deriding their own, and they wouldn't want to do that. They're having enough trouble these days, aren't they?
Well, why would they want to deride anybody for any reason, even if they weren't smokers? It just doesn't make sense. There's no connection, even to the advertising campaign of Winston, which is now straight up, no additives, whatever that means.
Well, it probably means exactly what it says, no additives, no preservatives, no little stuff added to the, I don't know. I saw the tobacco companies have their CEOs up there claiming that the tobacco smoking is non-addictive. I can tell you that's crap. I'm addicted, have been all my adult life. Anyway, I think the bigger question here is why they would do this. Now, there's got to be a reason.
Oh, there's definitely.
Obviously, somebody sat in an advertising strategy room in Wall Street or somewhere in New York, probably, or L.A., and thought this one up.
Definitely.
Yeah. But why?
I got an email from Bob Bigelow.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Hold that email. We're at the bottom of the hour. That's a good place to hang everybody up, which I love doing. Peter Gersten is here. So, Bob Bigelow shot an email off to Peter on this subject. This is really, really interesting. What do you think R.J. Reynolds is doing by doing something like this? I mean, what are they trying to accomplish? Certainly not selling cigarettes, right? Unless they came up with some sort of percentage of abductees who are smokers. It's a complete puzzle. We will be right back. Once again, we have the R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Company in some markets taking out an ad in newspapers in which they state, quote, if aliens are smart enough to travel through space, why do they keep abducting the dumbest people on Earth? End quote. Peter Gersten is here talking with us about this. He is our nation's only real full-time UFO attorney, maybe the only one, period, as far as I know. Peter, you say you heard from the man, Bob Bigelow, Robert Bigelow.
I did. He issued a statement initially that made the mailing lists, and I responded to that statement. And in reply, he stated in his email that I should ask them for an apology on behalf of all abductees everywhere.
Uh-huh.
And that they should acknowledge that they have no idea about anything related to UFO, alien abductions, and whatever. And possibly they might be open to funding research on the topic. Could you imagine that? Winston Zicker.
No, I really don't.
Fund alien abduction research. Well,
this is so curious. So Bob wasn't so happy about this either.
No, how can anybody be happy? And the reason I wasn't happy is because it's directly, well, not directly, indirectly connected to my lawsuit. Basically, I'm vouching for the credibility of these abductees. I'm bringing a lawsuit against the state of Arizona and the U.S. government based on the U.S. Constitution, Article 4, Section 4, which requires the federal government to protect the states against invasion.
Mm-hmm.
The theory of my invasion are these alien abductions. So these will be the witnesses if we ever get our day in court.
Hmm.
You know, the dumbest people on earth. And it's not true. You see, that's the bottom line of it's not true. It's.
I wonder if they're reacting to your lawsuit.
Well, it seems, unfortunately, that there's a news blackout. Now, I would be the last person to believe that.
Why don't I do this? Why don't I, right now on the air, since we're in all these top markets, until Phil gets here, why don't we say, hey, R.J. Reynolds, if you would like to come on and tell us the reasoning behind your ad, we'd be glad to give you airtime, and in fact put you on the air with Peter Gersten, and we will not pummel you, we will simply gently inquire as to why you have done this. You are hereby officially invited. How about that, Peter?
That's excellent. I love it. Definitely.
If they were to come on, what do you, and remember now, I'm a smoker, Mr. Reynolds, so I guess in a way I'm on your side. Not that I've been abducted. But what do you think he'd say? I mean, if somebody from the tobacco company came on, what do you think he'd say?
I have no idea, to tell you the truth. I can't. I've been staring at this ad for about a week now, and I can't figure it out. I can't understand the logic or any kind of reasoning behind it, unless there's something at a different level that we're not appreciating.
Okay, other than the quote which we have here, the specific quote, is there any other reference to, you said there was a picture of what appears to be a UFO.
Yeah, that's interesting also because it's one page. Now, the weeklies aren't as big as, say, the New York Times or Wall Street Journal, but it's, you know, it's a tabloid size. But still, it's one page with a picture of something in it that's, I would assume, a UFO based on the copy. But I don't know, you know, the significance of the photo. So
What does the object in the photo look like?
I would guess a disc-shaped solid object that has a little dome on top. Doesn't seem to be any lights at all.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to tell if the crease in the paper is part of the, well, no, I guess the object is right in the middle, and it's...
There must be more wording in the ad than just this.
About UFOs? Well, there's warnings.
Warnings?
Yeah, no additives in our tobacco does not mean
no,
a safe cigarette.
So you mean then this quote takes up the best part of the other side of the page?
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's right. Other than the warnings, other than the four lines with this copy, it's blank. Basically, it's blank. There's nothing there other than it says Winston also. Mm. But you can't miss this because it looks like a centerfold because it's two double-page. So it must be a centerfold in each of the weeklies. So you get to the centerfold, you open the centerfold, and right in front of your eyes on the left is some UFO, and you can't miss if aliens are smart enough to travel through space. It almost validates, I don't know if they're trying to validate the alien abduction experience in a way where they don't appear to. Is it a message?
Well, that's what I've been sitting here wondering. And it suggests that aliens are real. In other words, if you just read the first part, it appears to be a statement. If aliens are smart enough to travel through space,
right.
If you stop there,
right.
that would appear to validate the entire concept of aliens here. It really would. I'd think about it. If aliens are smart enough to travel through space, would seem to suggest that they believe that is so, and then they go on with the slam. Why do they keep abducting the dumbest people on Earth? So the first part in itself is intriguing. Do you think R.J. Reynolds has concluded that, in fact, they are here?
I have no idea what R.J. Reynolds has concluded, but there's been a...
Do you think it's possible that with shrinking U.S. markets, R.J. Reynolds is contemplating galactic infestation?
I see. You think that they might be appealing to the aliens. In other words, stroking them on one hand.
Well, it could be a big market, Peter.
you know, maybe I can, you know, use that on my website.
Sorry.
Just put some banners up there. The Marlboro Alien.
There is. You know, they could switch from the Marlboro Man. I don't think they can use them anymore to an alien, a gray maybe.
They have camels now. What, Joe Camel?
To which the anti-smoking would people would say, see what happens to your skin?
Joe Alien.
I have no idea.
There's been an increase in I think, commercials that have ETs. I was watching TV the other night.
I know.
And there's one, what, long-distance calls, AT&T, 1-800-COLLECT. They have an alien in a telephone booth.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw that.
You see, you know, aliens in our culture a lot more now. It's almost acceptable. It's cultural.
Why do you think that would be?
Well, some people would think of programming. Uh-huh. You know, we're reaching the generation now that will finally accept the idea that there could be life somewhere else, another life form, you know, interacting with us. There's no question there is. So maybe it's becoming more acceptable to think about that. At least, you know, in a ridiculous type of way as this ad is.
Well, I think they're looking for a new market. I mean, they know something we don't. They're here. There could be literally billions of them out there, and they have yet to test the pleasure of a cigarette. So
Richard Hoagland would see a message in this. In other words, he would know exactly what this meant.
I know he would.
Right. He would say, oh, this is obvious.
It's obvious. That's right. Look at the location of those three ads that you mentioned.
That's right.
19.5, each one of them.
Right.
I don't know. So what else are we to say about this, actually?
Well, I guess nothing until I finally make contact with R.J. Reynolds, or they make contact with me.
More likely, they'll get to me first.
Well,
if they have any cojones at all, they'll call me.
Well, let's hope so. You're going to give them a.
I'll give them a fax number. Fax number for you, R.J. Reynolds. My fax number is area code 775-727-8499. All you have to do is fax me and say yes. A representative would just love to come on, Art, and explain this ad. Or maybe, Peter. The whole concept was put out something so inexplicable, so puzzling, that it will cause a gigantic controversy on places like the Art Bell Show. And, you know, our name gets out. That's advertising in itself, in a way. I mean, you've got to think like Madison Avenue thinks.
Anything is possible. So you're saying that R.J. Reynolds owes me some money for continuing this controversy?
They may. They may. And they may owe me some, too.
You know, I just turned the page on this Seattle Weekly, and, you know, synchronicity is amazing. On the next page is an advertisement for George Winston, a solo piano concert.
And then probably following that is Stan Winston, the special effects guy.
Yeah.
Well, I just don't know what to say about it, Peter, except...
Well, you know what this means? It's time for the abductees to come out of the closet. It's time for everybody who has had these experiences to come forward and talk about them and share them and show everybody else that there's a truth, there's a reality, number one, and number two, that they're not dumb, they're not stupid, they're your average everyday people, you know, some very intelligent, not so, but still, you know, you can't categorize people that are being abducted. At least I haven't seen any way to do that. There's possibly a reason why they are, you know, maybe a reason we're not aware of, but.
Well, maybe they would like to look into the Travis Walton case.
Well, that's one of the prime examples.
You know, where it wasn't just one person. It was a whole group of people who went through two sets of lie detector tests.
Yeah.
Maybe they'd like to look at that case. And
yeah, that's pretty unique. It also happened in 1975.
That's right.
That year was just a window just opened. I have like two accordion files in 1975.
Mm-hmm.
It was an amazing, amazing year. But I think it's time to come forward, you know, and join together and at least support the cause lawsuit.
Well, what's the latest?
Well, I have 120 days from September 1st to serve the defendants. I haven't served the defendants yet because, surprisingly, I found a news blackout on September 1st. Remember I was on that night?
Yes.
As a matter of fact, that was what we thought was a major event.
Yes.
Whenever I'm on, you have an unbelievable program, but you always have an unbelievable program. You're not boring, that's for sure, Arthur.
Well.
But I was even interviewed in Arizona by Channel 3 TV that was supposed to feature a segment on the lawsuit either that night or the night of September 2nd, and they were interviewed me for 2 hours, and an hour before the program, I got a call from the reporter saying they killed it.
Who killed it?
Somebody on the station, whoever has...
Somebody at the TV station?
Yeah, Channel 3 decided.
After going through 2 hours on camera?
Yeah.
I'd go strangle the guy.
Yeah, well, that...
But why would they... Now, why would they cancel 2 hours of tape? Boy, they must have had a lot of good stuff.
And not only that, none of the newspapers even mentioned the story.
Mm-hmm.
As an attorney licensed to practice law in Arizona who brings a lawsuit in federal court who states that he has evidence, and can prove in court that we are in contact with another form of intelligence and one aspect is threatening,
mm-hmm.
and no one is interested in speaking to that attorney?
I don't.
That's amazing.
That.
Even in Arizona?
I don't believe that.
It's like quiet. It's like, ooh, an attorney has evidence of an ET invasion? No, we don't want to upset the people. No, we better not talk about that.
No, I don't buy it.
Well,
not for a second.
You know the only people that were interested? Morning talk shows. I've been on about 20 talk shows in the last 3 weeks.
Morning talk shows?
Morning talk shows. Yeah, anywhere from Howard Stern wannabes, you know, who completely ridicule the phenomenon.
Well, if you think you were ridiculed there, wait till you get to Howard.
Well, no, he has a different approach also. He's had people on. He has an open mind. That's his position. He has an open mind. He doesn't ridicule it. But there were people that just from the time I got on to the time I got off, maybe 10 minutes, they were just completely going crazy.
Right.
And I just said what I had to say. I didn't care.
Well, why don't you go on with Howard?
Well, he has to invite me.
Hey, Howard, invite Peter on. You'd enjoy it.
He's sleeping.
And you're right. And, you know, you're right. That's all right. A lot of his people will call him up. And it'd be a good interview for Howard. I'd like to see how he would handle it.
Oh, yeah, I would have a good time with Howard.
Or he'd have a good time with you.
Either way.
One way or the other, it'd be a good time.
Right, I'm from New York.
Yeah, and there's a lot to chew on here. I mean, the lawsuit itself is one big story, and you could even cover the R.J. Reynolds thing with him as well. And it seemed, look, if the media would like to contact you for an interview,
right.
You're a very dynamic interview, how would they get hold of you?
Well, they can do it through email, UFOlawyer@cause.org, UFOlawyer@cause.org.
That's all strung together, right? UFOlawyer@cause.org. .org.
They can go to the website, www.cause.org.
Is your daily email letter still going out?
Oh, yes, but we send out highlights now during the week of what's on the website. In other words, you don't even have to go to the website. I'll send you the highlights. If you're interested, then you go to the website.
So you register for this by going to your website and saying, okay, send it to me. It's free. They get it every day.
Right.
Highlights, and then it sends you to the website.
Plus, on the weekends, I send out something directly to them, and then we post it on the website.
Uh-huh.
The Cause and Effect, if you're not online, then you can subscribe to Cause and Effect, which is the offline highlights of the what's on the website and what we sent out. That comes out once a month. We sell that for $20 for 12 issues.
Okay.
There's a phone number for that.
Oh, all right. What is it?
616-344-1556.
Okay.
That's
616-344-1556.
And my phone number, if you promise to call during the day, Arizona time.
You're sure you want to do this? Now?
Yeah, might as well.
Really?
Might
All
as
right.
well.
All right. Go.
It's 480-609-9120.
That's your home phone number?
Well, it's the Cause office. Let's put it that way. The phone's in the office.
Okay, R.J. Reynolds. Call 480- 609-9120. Peter, thank you for being on the air with me tonight.
Anytime, Arthur.
It has been a pleasure. And when we get R.J. Reynolds begging to come on the show and explain this ad, I will immediately call you and we will interview them together.
Great. And you put in a good word with Phil for me, won't you?
I will do that.
Okay.
Good night, Peter.
Good night.
Well, this is Phil Henry, and I'll be right back with more. To my computer. That one was my fault. I programmed it incorrectly. I blame my computer enough when it really is wrong, so this time it wasn't. It did what I told it to do. See, that's why Phil's coming. All right, Steve Grohman. After high school, Steve says of himself, my desire was to enter the field of law enforcement. I entered the police academy, attended college for that purpose. After realizing this was not the field for me, I began in emergency medicine. I attained certifications up to and including paramedic, along with several specialty certifications, trauma life support, advanced cardiac life support, and so forth. I also was president of EMS, or EMS director for the emergency medical service where we lived in Texas. I have literally thousands of hours and years of administrative education and in-the-street experience in the medical field. Additionally, I was a successful business owner for 11 years. Even prior to being saved in 85, I knew evolution could never happen. This caused me to begin research in the creation evolution issue. Since then, we have amassed a virtual library and museum, much of which travels with us, that supports the creation account and Noah's flood as described in God's Word. We are originally from Texas, and I was ordained there. So we have a minister here. We currently attend Littleton Baptist Church in Littleton, New Hampshire, whenever we're not on the road. We've just started our sixth full year on the road, I guess. Wow. So what can I tell you about this man? Quite a bit. Over the past several years, he's met with and or corresponded with some of the foremost authorities in the field of creation science and research, including Dr. Stephen Austin of ICR, and GEM, Dr. Carl Baugh of Creation Evidence Museum in Glen Rose, Texas, and others. We visited places where human and dinosaur footprints exist together, along with a variety of marine life and land animals. We've interviewed people who have been in Hitler's SS Army, testified to the fact that evolution was the primary motivator behind Hitler. Really? Have seen and or photographed possible dinosaurs, have eaten mammoth meat, and in fact, still feed it to pets, and several people who have visited and explored ancient biblical sites such as Noah's Ark, and the list goes on and on. Because we are independent, we have the freedom to present information, gather resources, and meet people who have a specialized interest in a particular area and combine it to present a well-rounded seminar that is a real faith builder to the Christian. Due to the vast amounts of information, those who come in non-believers leave with a changed heart, or at least scratching their heads. Additionally, we have a wide variety of fossils, of which many were gathered by myself and my family during several of our own digs. He looks forward, he says, to being on the show. Well, now he's on. Hi there, Steve. Welcome.
Well, hello there.
Hi. You're on the air now.
Good morning.
Good morning. So, what I said, let's first check out what I said. You're an ordained minister, is that correct?
Yes, sir, that is.
Okay. In what faith?
Well, we are Baptist.
Oh, Baptist, all right.
Yes.
Hardcore, huh?
Well, yes, sir.
Yeah, all right, that's fine.
And no apologies there.
That's fine. You believe, do you not, that the earth, no, wrong, that man was put on earth 6,000 years ago by the creative hand of God that did his work in 6 days and rested on number seven. Is that right?
Yes, sir. It's around 6,000. You know, you can't really get precise, but it's
plus or minus.
Right, between 6,000 and 7,000
uh-huh.
years ago, right.
Huh. How do you handle all of the, and we'll talk about the evidence for creation and for that timeline, I'm sure you've got a great deal, but how do you handle all of the apparent evidence, including carbon dating processes and other processes that are now coming along, that are dating things back so many thousands of years beyond 6,000, and all the evidence of evolution, you know, we were all once monkeys and apes and then people, and aside from a couple of little missing links, it does look like, you know, if you've ever seen the chain, the little picture they show you in school of the ape slowly morphing into modern man. Most of that is true. There are a couple of gaps, but I mean, how do you answer all of this? I gave you too many questions.
I was going to say, boy, which one are we going to take first?
I'll take your choice.
Well, you started with carbon dating, so I guess we could start there. But,
sure.
You know, there are a lot of assumptions that go into the whole evolutionary ideas, no matter what branch or what avenue you're looking at. Carbon dating was invented by a guy named Willard Libby, University of Chicago, in 1953. And that was really a short period of time ago. And he himself said that it's only good for about 2,000 years. But yet you'll see people today, you know, want to try and say something that's been carbon dated at, you know, 50,000 years or 100,000 years or some of that effect.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the inventor himself said it's only good for 2,000.
Mm-hmm.
And the assumption is that the decay rate, which we are observing, has always been steady throughout time. Well, number one, they know that's not true. But number two, it's impossible to know if that's true or not, because you would have to observe it, you know, throughout all that time. And so the assumption goes in that, yes, it has been steady, but if that assumption is not correct, well, then the whole scale is thrown way off, and there's really nothing else you can do about it.
What about other substances that have certain radioactive decay times?
Well, they're all basically calibrated off each other, and they're sort of verified against this supposed geologic column. But yeah, something like rubidium strontium, you know, they say the half-life is 48.8 billion years. Well, anybody can believe that if they want to, but you certainly can't observe that. You know, nobody's been around watching one for that long.
That's true.
And so it's a belief. It's an assumption. There are a lot of assumptions that go in, and it is certainly a belief that it has been steady.
They can, however, at the macro level, monitor the decay rate and project based on that. Yes.
Well, it's true, but again, like for instance, as cosmic radiation bombards our atmosphere, it converts nitrogen-14 into carbon-14.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the magnetic field is what prevents the cosmic radiation from coming in, and they know the magnetic field is getting weaker, which means there's more coming in today. But the assumption is, based on the uniformitarianism idea, that the present is the key to the past, and what we observe now has always been going on. You know, the assumption is that it is and has been steady, but that's actually impossible because with the magnetic field decaying, we're getting more radiation in today than just a few hundred years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So actually the whole scale is just totally skewed.
What about astronomy? In other words, we look out, we now think somewhere between 12 and 15 billion years to the first objects, mainly quasars that we can see out that far, that have a shift that would indicate that they are out that far, that would indicate that the Big Bang and or the big creative nanosecond occurred that long ago, at least they think 15 billion years ago.
Well, that's true. That's true, too. But once again, there are assumptions that go in. I mean, that is definitely what they're saying. But, you know, the argument goes something along the lines of, hey, if that star is, you know, 200 million light years away, then we must be 200 million years old, or the light couldn't be here.
Right. You know, that is what they assume. Yeah.
Right, those types of arguments. But you see, in the Bible it says that God created that light. And, you know, he created Adam and Eve, and they were people who
The Bible says he created all light, or that light, or there was no light at all prior to the Big Bang, or that instant of total creation, or are we talking about only man's arrival on Earth, let there be light? Well, we've got a sun, right?
Well, yes and no, but see, the issue comes in where in Genesis 1, the creation chapter in the Bible, declares what was made on which day and in the order and this, that, and the other, and of the various items that were created all the way from the universe down to the, you know, to the water and the animals.
So you're sticking with the whole shebang having begun 6 or 7,000 years ago.
Oh, absolutely, because right in the middle of the Ten Commandments in Exodus 20, verse 11, it says, "For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea, and all that in them is." He says he made everything in 6 days. And something of interest in Mark 10:6, the Lord himself talking says that Adam and Eve were here at the beginning of the creation. And again, you have a 6 day creation time frame that climaxes with the creation of mankind. And Jesus himself said that was the beginning of the creation. And so therefore,
why should we believe that what is written in the Bible with regard to Genesis all the way out to the end days is a good rendition of what was originally recorded anyway?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Why should we believe what's written in the Bible, put simply?
Well, the Bible, it's funny, just 3 days ago I was at Westchester University in Pennsylvania, and this kind of question would come up. And the Bible is pretty well proven itself, I guess, is one way to put it.
How?
You know, you have just literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of prophecies that were certainly fulfilled. And in fact, take Jesus Christ himself. I mean, there were over 300 prophecies that were fulfilled. Well, that cannot be a coincidence. And when you take all of the total of the Bible from beginning to end and you read it and study it and compare it and whatnot, it cannot have been a coincidence.
And you don't think people, humans, have messed with the Bible between then and now?
Oh, there's been a lot of messing with it, sure, absolutely. But the Bible also declares, you know, God also declares...
Well, that'd be the hand and the word of man as well as that of God.
Well, but...
Not the pure word of God.
Well, but God himself says that he's going to preserve his word, and so I certainly believe that he did, and the evidence seems to be there that in fact he did.
Well, God knows some trick we don't, because if you line up 13 people and they whisper a secret from one end to the other, it's completely changed by the time it reaches person 13.
Well, that's exactly right, too, except in this case, it's funny because, sometimes on call-in shows, somebody will call in and say, you know, that very argument there, you can't, you know, you get a different secret by the time it comes back around.
Yes.
But, you know, in the case of the Bible, if you take a look at we have a seminar notebook that we have for $5, got a lot of neat stuff in it, and one of them is, one page is a longevity chart,
mm-hmm.
and it shows taking the time elements that are given in Scripture for, you know, various individuals that are given there, and the lifespans of all the heavy hitters in the Bible, if you will, their lifespans all intersect each other.
What people once lived to be, what, 300 or better?
Oh, no, well over
900
in many cases, yes. In the original creation, was quite different than what we see today. Based on what is described in Genesis.
Why are our lifespans shorter now?
Well, the biggest reason is, of course, sin entered the world, you know, and everything is just on a downward spiral, which, again, is totally backwards from evolution. Evolution says everything's getting better. Once sin entered the world, then, of course, everything is going to go downhill and degrade and degenerate and whatnot.
Ah, but today we have science giving us a longer and longer lifespan. In fact,
well, that's true. But it's
in fact, doctors are saying live another 30 to 50 years and they will give us immortality.
Well, they can't give us immortality, but yes, as technology improves, sure, you can advance and but still, the average lifespan, we're still only in the 70s. You know, we're not up around 900 yet, that's for sure.
No, that is for sure. But I'm saying that in modern times, we can document an increased lifespan in...
Oh, absolutely. But that's just a benefit of the technology and the advancements in medicines and all of that kind of thing that, sure, there are going to be fluctuations, but still it's...
Well, when they unlock the genetic code, which they're well on the way to doing, and perhaps even before that, somewhere in the next 30 to 50 years, they are saying, look here, we're learning about telomeres, we're going to find the switch that stops cells from multiplying at a very early age when we begin to die, and we are going to become immortal. That's what science is now saying. A very, very reputable scientist, and I guess you don't believe a word of it, huh?
Well, we will not hit immortality, that's for sure.
All right. Minister, hold on. My guest is Steve Broman, and he's a Southern Hellfire Baptist minister. And he's talking about creation, and we are going to have the phone lines open shortly. Who am I? I'm Art Hendry. From the high desert, this is Coast to Coast AM. Heard during the day, it was not Los Angeles that got the new NFL franchise. Congratulations, Houston. You've got a new football team down there. What you going to call them? Somebody suggested, in keeping with Richard Hoagland's NASA team, they be called the Houston Orions. I don't know if that sounds mean enough. I really don't. They have mean-sounding names. The Raiders. The Killers. Hey, that'd be good. The Killers. I watched NFL this last weekend, and they're all trying to kill each other. Call them the Houston Killers. Once again, here is Steve Broman. Steve, welcome back.
Thank you, sir.
I don't suppose you'd want to call them the Houston Killers, huh?
Oh, that's probably not too good. That was a little harsh, don't you think?
Well, you know, if you watch the game, they are in there killing each other.
You do have a point there.
Listen, you believe that dinosaurs roamed the earth roughly the same time as man, right?
Absolutely.
You even believe that dinosaurs may be alive today.
Absolutely.
Well, where are they, Steve?
Well, in fact, there have been a lot of here of late, recent newspaper articles, AP Wires even put some of these things out, just since this last June or July or so. Of course, some of the ones that we might be familiar with, you know, the Loch Ness Monster, that kind of thing, and there's certainly good evidence that something is in there, and up in Lake Champlain,
that's right.
Champ up there, and Dr. Roy Mackel, a microbiologist at the University of Chicago, has gone into the swamps in Africa a number of times in search of Mokilemimbe, who is apparently an Apatosaurus, which may still be alive out there today. And something else, we travel on the road. We are about 40 to 45 weeks out of the year. We live in a motorhome, and we travel from state to state each week in a different state. We set up and do creation seminars in churches.
Brother Loves Travel and Salvation Show.
Something like that.
Uh-huh. Okay.
But we carry about 350 to 400 fossils with us, some of which are dinosaur bones and claws and whatnot. But also, we have four live dinosaurs. And
wait a minute.
Yeah, we
wait,
set them.
Stop. Hold it. Stop. Right there.
We set them up in cages.
You have four live dinosaurs.
Yes. That might take a little explaining, wouldn't it?
Yes, Steve, it is going to take some explaining.
All right. Well, what we have is anybody who has ever seen Jurassic Park, you know, the guy is stealing the little dinosaur embryos in the Jeep, and the weather's pretty bad, and he gets all messed up, and the frill dragon comes out and gets him. And, you know, got the frill around the neck and all that. We have one of those. And
where did you get it?
She's She, well, we call her a she. There's a specific reason for that, but her name is Rhodey.
Rhodey?
Rhodey is about, she's only about, I guess, 18 or so inches long, you know, total.
Yes.
And she'll stand up on her back legs if she gets, you know, scared and upset and that kind of thing. And,
yes.
And throw her frill out. And she has spit on me twice. It's not black, tarry, poisonous type of thing, but, you know, they have to doctor it up for the movies.
Kapooey.
And, in fact, just last week, we kind of let her out in the, at the church when we were done, and she ran around and jumped in a little boy's lap and kind of excited him.
Doesn't that bother the congregation to set a dinosaur loose in its midst?
Oh, no, absolutely not. They love it. In fact, they're always wanting us to set them loose, you know. But then another one, we have a bearded dragon, and we have a...
wait a minute. Let's do these very carefully. A bearded dragon.
Right, a bearded dragon. Which, if you take a look at a bearded dragon, and by the way, we have a number of videotapes that we have 11 videotapes through different series and different issues and whatnot. We have.
Do you have a website up with these photographs?
Yes, creationseminar.com. Excuse me, .net. We have .com and .net, but .net is the one we mainly work with.
Creationseminar.net.
Right.
And there's pictures.
And I believe we have put them on there. We've got them on there. Yes, sir. We do have them on there.
All right.
We have a the bearded dragon is exactly like a an ankylosaurus. If you take a look at that thing and then go to Walmart and get one of the ankylosaurus toys and the pictures in the books of what they look like based on the skeletal structure, they're the exact same thing.
Where does one go to catch one of these little guys? In other words, where'd you get them?
Well, you can go to just about any decent-sized pet shop and see these things. In fact, you can go to just about any pet store and grab a book on the bearded dragon, the frilled dragon, or the basilisk and the sail fins and all these. And you look in there, and their names are all something asaurus, that type of thing. And they even admit in there that these things are certainly look like dinosaurs, you know, of yesteryear, and comments like that. And you know, something interesting about the dinosaur. The word dinosaur was coined by a fellow named Richard Owen in 1841. And the first bones that they ever put the thing back together, it was an iguanodon. And the reason they called it an iguanodon is, of course, it looked like a giant iguana.
But I've been to these museums, and they do put the bones together, and by the time they're done, they're things that are bigger than giraffes. I mean, they're gigantic, and your dinos are little cute things.
Well, that's true.
So
except
how did they shrink?
Also in the Bible describes that. Also, there have been 2 and 3 foot wingspan moths and butterflies and dragonflies found in the fossil record. There have been, and we show pictures of these also, 13 foot tall hornless rhinoceros frozen pretty much intact.
Hmm.
And that's a giant rhino. 8 foot beavers have been found in the fossil record. Well, see, the Bible describes in Genesis, the original creation, there was a layer of water which would allow several benefits. Number one, increased pressure. We had better oxygen at one time on this planet.
Mm.
And a layer of water surrounding our atmosphere would also protect us from the harmful effects that the sun puts off and various cosmic radiation, all that kind of stuff. And that is the main factor in what allowed things to live for hundreds and hundreds of years in that perfect type of environment. Well, something about a reptile, they never stop growing. They grow throughout their life. Well, if a dog grows for a few years and stops, and we do, and a horse does, and a giraffe does, but a reptile will grow throughout its life.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a time on this planet where you've got 3 foot wingspan dragonflies and you've got 8 foot beavers,
mm-hmm.
and they only grow for a period of time and then stop, if you throw reptiles in with the same mix there, but yet they're growing every day of their life, how big is one going to get when it is living for 800 years or 1,100 years?
No, that's a good point.
You see, they would get
really
enormous.
Big. Yeah.
Today, they'll only live about 30 years, and they still grow every day of their life, and they'll get between 5 and 6 feet. And, you know, everything is scaled down. They have found 12-foot human skeletons also in the fossil record. Well, we don't get 12 feet anymore either. You know, there are a number of issues at stake here, and we cover in great detail on maybe our session 2 on these types of issues also.
That's amazing. When you show these to people, what do they say?
Oh, they're absolutely amazed and astonished. You know, it was funny. One time I was in a pet store just a few months back, about 3 or 4 months ago, and I just happened to walk in. We like to go into some of them, especially if they specialize in reptiles. Anyway, I'm in this pet store, and this guy is standing there looking at the reptile pins.
Yeah.
And he doesn't know me. He doesn't know what I do or who I am or anything like that. He just, he's looking at, I walk in, and the guy has this really bizarre look on his face, and he said, he looks at me and points to the cages there, and he says, yeah, look at these guys. These things are dinosaurs.
Uh-huh.
And it sort of opened up the conversation for me, but, you know, it's really not all that hard for people to see that.
Now, let me tell you a little story. I've been on the air for a lot of years now. It seems like all my adult life. Actually, I have been on the air all my adult life. Years ago, when I worked in Las Vegas at KDWN, where I began all this in Las Vegas, there was a story that ran on the Associated Press about a man in northern Nevada who found some eggs. And I'll be damned if they didn't have a photograph of this egg with a dinosaur coming out of it in this guy's hand. Moreover, he then took the remaining eggs and put them in a metal shed. And I couldn't stand it. I got hold of the guy and I interviewed him on the air, and he swore up and down this was true. He put them in a metal shed and to keep them, you know, for the night. And he woke up in the morning, and the metal shed had a ragged hole in it that was obviously made from the inside going out. And these creatures had hatched and split right through the metal. And he had photographs of all this. Now, maybe the whole thing was a giant hoax, but if it was, it was a well-documented one. And I sat here and I interviewed him on the air, and he was as clean and sober as you can imagine and swore it was true.
Oh, yeah, that kind of thing, it certainly wouldn't surprise me at all. You see, the problem is we have been convinced for years and years that dinosaurs died millions of years ago, and they were mean and all that. And, of course, the Bible says everything was made at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And the evidence certainly indicates that. You look at a Komodo dragon in Indonesia. These things are 350-pound lizards. Mm-hmm. And if they're getting that big today, how big are they going to get when they're, you know, 600 years old in an environment where beavers will get 8 feet?
It's a good point.
You know, you would have a dinosaur, a terrible lizard. And there are just scores of examples of these. In fact, in the little intro where you were talking about me a little bit, I mentioned Carl Baugh. You mentioned him in our letter there.
I did, yes.
Dr. Carl Baugh has is like a baby plesiosaur down at his museum. There was a guy up in Ohio who owns a bait shop who went up to Lake Erie just for vacation, and he ran across this thing. A bunch of birds caught his attention. He walked mm-hmm. over, and there is a baby dinosaur laying on the beach. And he picked it up. He's a taxidermist also, so he takes the thing home, stuffs it, hangs it in his ceiling from his bait shop. Since 1991, the thing hung there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Carl Ball found out about it last December, and he took the next plane the next morning up there, offered the guy $3,000 for it, and he took it, and he took it home.
Hmm.
I have videotape where he is walking into hospitals in Texas, and just with a cameraman behind him, and walking in, and of course people have never seen anything like this in their life, you know, and he walks in, he says, hey, I want you to CAT scan and MRI and x-ray this thing.
Of course.
And of course they can take the image and rotate it and all that, and the thing has a fish hook in it. And apparently somebody caught it, and, you know, decided, I don't think I want this thing, and pitched it, you know. And but now Carl Ball has it, and it's stuffed, and it's sitting there in his museum. If folks want to go down there in Glen Rose, Texas, they can see the thing today. There are just literally thousands of examples of that kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
where people have either seen something, well-documented photographs, and, you know, speaking of photographs, we have all the time you'll see in National Geographic or even on the nightly news sometimes, they'll find some new cave, and they'll go in, and I have just literally, I don't know, dozens and dozens of photographs of man and dinosaur in cave art together.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they go and tell us this cave art is 30,000 years old or something to that effect, which, of course, the time element is not correct, but give it to them for a minute. If, in fact, dinosaur, the word, was invented in 1841, they first put the bones together, and the first one was an iguanodon.
Yeah.
That was in 1841. Well, if they died 65 million years ago, what in the world are they doing in cave art that's 30,000 years old? How could man possibly know what they look like?
Well, yes, but according to you, that cave art could not be 30.
No, absolutely not. No, it's not that old, but I'm just saying even the evolution is still, they'll talk about these things and they'll throw this stuff out at us, but we never really think it through. Because even if that timing was correct, it's impossible for somebody 30,000 years ago to have known what they look like, because they're not going to find the bones till 1841.
See, when you go outside at night and you look at the stars, and you realize, I don't know if you, where is it you are now?
Right now we are in Mount Carmel, Pennsylvania.
Well, I don't know what the weather is like there, but if you come out here to my desert and you look at the sky, the Milky Way extends from one horizon all the way to the other. And that is more stars than you and I can contemplate. Those stars are suns. Around those suns, we now know it's highly probable there are planets. Many, 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 many planets. Zillions of them. At least trillions of them or more. And it's hard to look up at all that, for me, to imagine there are not other intelligent life forms on those planets around all those suns. Now, when you look up, do you imagine that, or do you imagine nothing other than, with regard to intelligent life, other than what's on Earth?
Well, a couple of things here. Yes, there are a lot of assumptions that there are planets, but nobody's ever seen another one out there like that, around these stars and all that. Now, there was a couple of wannabe hopefuls just a few months back, in fact, but they come to find out they're not planets after all. But
I don't know about that. There's quite a bit of evidence that, in fact, the larger planets have been detected around certain suns, and they're pretty sure of that. I have not heard that evidence called back yet.
Well, yeah, in fact, in Science News, just I believe it was 3 weeks ago, they discounted one of the, I forget the exact name of the thing, but it was one of the big hopefuls several weeks ago. But
I mean, couldn't you admit the possibility of planets about them? Could have created the planets with the suns?
Well,
he did here.
Absolutely, that is true. But once again, it would be a created act. It would be not a happenstance that they happened to form because of an explosion, you know, billions of years ago.
Fine. Well, okay, let's operate under that assumption and say they were created along with Earth at the same time. Many Earth-like planets. So why can you not imagine there are intelligent beings on some of these planets?
Well, the only thing is a couple of issues. The Bible says that this planet was put here to sustain life and put us on here and all that.
Yes.
And it says, the Bible says that Eve is the mother of all.
Yes.
And it would be a hard time to have Adam and Eve being the mother of all if there are other planets, populated as well. That's not to say they're not. I mean, it's not, you know, proven one way or the other. It's totally a belief system. And
did God say we were the only ones?
Well, he didn't say it in that exact tone, but what he did say is he made the sun, moon, and stars, and he talks about them in Amos. He talks about them in Job. He talks about them in Psalm. I mean, there are several places where he talks about them.
Well,
so it's not like it's a foreign concept to us.
I've got you. But, Steve, imagine this for a second, and we've been toying with this idea for the last couple of days. An alien lands on Earth, maybe on the south lawn of the White House, God help it, and it comes out, and in its hand is roughly a copy of our Bible. Your attitude would be what?
Well, I don't know. I'd have to wait till that would happen, I think. But, of course, it would depend. I mean, at first, I would probably assume it to be not true, not real.
A hoax.
Yes. And it wouldn't certainly be the first time that, not necessarily on that issue, but just the evolutionists in general have built up a lot of, hopeful examples of things that have
turned out later. But I was giving you an example that I would think would please you. In other words, well, one small mistake. God may have created not just this world, but all that is. And that may mean other intelligent life who received God's word just the way we did. Isn't that possible for you to contemplate?
Oh, I suppose it's always possible, but once again, it's a purely hypothetical thing at this point, and there's so much evidence that is concrete and that is solid, that verifies what the Bible says. I just don't see that that's really.
All right. Did you see the movie Contact?
No, I did not.
Oh, darn. All right, well, then I'm going to set something up for you when we come back. We're at the top of the hour, and we will have open lines because I just know a lot of you out there have questions. My guest is a Baptist minister, Steve Grohman, a creationist. I'm Art Bell, or am I? Or to a federation of alien races, perhaps. I know, all very wildly speculative, no doubt about it, but let us assume for the sake of the conversation that such is occurring. Now, you go through a list of candidates who would be the proper candidates to represent humanity, and there would be a panel asking questions of these prospective candidates, and the most provocative of all the questions would be, do you believe in God, the God of the Bible? In fact, that was the question in the movie that caused the actress playing the part, Jodie Foster, playing a scientist, SETI scientist, to finally have to say no. And that cost her the seat on the machine. That cost her the seat. And it was a minister, probably much like yourself, that asked that question. If those were the circumstances, would you think that to be an appropriate question? Nah.
Oh, boy.
Would you ask that question?
Would I ask that question?
Of somebody representing the human race to all others?
I would certainly ask that question, yes.
You
but
would, yes.
I don't, that's all, you know, like you said, it's kind of
speculative.
Sci-fi, speculative, makes for good movies, but I kind of like to stick with the evidence that we have on the earth, you know?
Maybe you ought to watch that movie. You'd enjoy it.
Yeah, there's just a lot of problems. Like you mentioned, you know, this alien shows up at the White House lawn with a Bible in his hand.
Mm-hmm.
That could never happen because the Bible has a historical account of things that happened here. It would mean nothing to somebody else if there was somebody else somewhere else.
Unless it happened somewhere else.
Yeah, unless it happened somewhere else. But then if we're constantly replaying, you know, the history that we have everywhere else, we're just so off into the speculative realm of things here.
Okay, that's fine. All right, here's back down to earth. There is good, solid scientific information. It says carbon dating. Half-life of 5,568 years is valid to about 60,000 years ago, far more than the 2,000 your guest says is its maximum. Also, now here's one you can argue with, argon-argon dating is mentioned, which has a half-life of 1,250 million years and is in fact used to date rocks beyond the 60,000-year restriction of the carbon dating used on organic material. What say you?
Well, once again, the assumptions are that it's a steady decay rate. See, that's where the biggest part of the meltdown will come from. The whole uniformitarianism idea says that the present's the key to the past, and what we observe today has always been steady. But that is a belief. That is an assumption.
It's also science. I mean, they measure the decay rate.
Well, science is actually observable, testable, demonstrable.
You're right. Yes, repeatable.
But you can't observe 1,250 million years ago to... You can assume you've observed it, but you can't technically.
Well, I have to look. I agree with you, but we can't observe the decay rate within 5 or 10 or 20 or 30 years, and then project from that. Now,
assuming that it's been steady, that's where the problem.
Assuming it has been steady. Now, what evidence do you have? Would be the logical question that it has not been steady.
Well, first of all, the assumptions that go in are basically a starting point, which the assumption is around 20 billion years ago, that it's been steady, but probably it has not. And, of course, like I mentioned with carbon-14, I'm not sure where you got that half-life. It's roughly close because everything I've always read, and Willard Libby said it was 5,730 years, but, you know, 56-something or 57, you know, close to that range. But you have to assume that steadiness. But also you have to remember, I like to use an analogy when I go into schools, because I speak a lot in schools also. And, you know, I ask if there are any hunters, and, you know, several kids will raise their hand or whatever, and I'll say, okay, and I'll have a target on the screen. And I'll say, you know, if you're 10 feet away and you shoot at this target, if you miss the exact center of the bullseye by 1 inch,
right?
If you were deer hunting or whatever it is, bear hunting, you've dropped that animal because that's close enough.
Right.
But now, if you don't change the trajectory of that bullet, you know, don't take into account that it's only going, you know, a few hundred feet or whatever, or yards, but you move that thing out 100 miles, well, you don't even know a shot was fired.
Right.
It wouldn't even hit the paper.
Correct.
And the point is, if we're off just a little bit in our assumptions, by the time you scoot that thing out for millions of years, you're so far off, it's just not even in the argument.
But again, the critical question is, what scientific proof exists suggesting that these decay rates are inconsistent?
Well, like I mentioned, the magnetic field, the decay rate of the magnetic field is what prevents the cosmic radiation from coming in. And see, they're all calibrated off each other and off themselves, and they all have to correspond within each other's ranges and whatnot. And same with the, and then of course that's compared with the fossil record and all that. But see, we don't know how much God started with when he built this place. I mean, obviously, if there was a tree, and if there were people, and if there were animals, and there was water, then you had all these things. Well, the assumption is that, you know, roughly 20 billion years ago, the grandma and grandpa hydrogen helium atom blow up, and that's only two of the 92 elements of the Earth's crust. Well, where did the other 90 come from? And see, the problem is it's not so much as just the decay rate. It's the whole scenario.
Well, I will give you this, Steve. I have had every manner of high-powered scientist you can imagine on the air, from people at NASA to theoretical physicists to astronomers, and two the one. Every single one of them can answer questions left and right until you ask them what occurred just 1 second prior to the Big Bang, which they all seem to subscribe to, and they all go blank. They don't know. They have no idea.
Well, there are a lot of different versions of the Big Bang also, you know, what exactly it was and when it was and how it was and all that. I carry several textbooks with me, and we show them just right out of textbooks what they're actually saying. And, of course, it's all speculative. It's, you know, one will say 15 billion years, one will say 16, one will say 18 to 20, one will, you know, they're, you know, which maybe seems close, but, you know, you're talking the difference between 15 billion and 20 billion. That is an enormous amount of time.
Oh, yes.
And it just verifies right there that it is an assumption. And, you know, it can be an assumption all it wants to, but that doesn't make it reality. I have in our possession literally thousands of quotes from leading evolutionists, not creationist people, but evolutionists, staunch, heavy hitters, the top notch, you know, like, for instance, Harold Urey. He was Stanley Miller's partner in this, trying to create life in a lab, in a test tube. And, you know, everybody's heard of the Miller experiment. Well, Harold Urey is a Nobel Prize winner for his research in chemistry and, top notch, you know, in his field. And he came right out and said, we believe as an article of faith that life evolved from dead matter on this planet. Well, if it's a belief, why is it taught as a fact? And, you know,
I'm a cherry picker, Steve. I'm a cherry picker. Now, you know what that means, and maybe you don't, but I'll explain specifically in my case what it means. In other words, I believe in evolution. I think the evidence for evolution is extraordinary. However, I also, which means that I believe you are wrong about some of your dating, but I also believe in God, Steve, and I believe that God's hand in the process of evolution is everywhere. And so I know you object to that point of view. I'm sure you do. But I do see that as a very strong possibility. I think we are more than the bodies that we have. You know, we're made mostly out of water, and then we have these wonderful, intricate, misunderstood brains. And we don't know all that much about our brains and about ourselves. And I think there is something to it. There's God's hand in this, a creator's hand somewhere. But.
Well, let me address that right quick.
Please.
That is so common. But see, the reality is, I guess in many respects, the sad reality is, where does a person, and I mentioned this when I was at Westchester University a couple of days ago, and where do you come up, I'll say you because I'm talking with you now, but where are those students there, where do you come up with that? See, in order to arrive at a conclusion like that,
mm-hmm.
it's within our own brains. It's within our own
You're absolutely
what
correct.
We have observed and we have.
And that's where it came from, Steve.
But that's exactly right. And that's normal, except the problem comes in. That makes me or you or him or her or whoever their final authority. And what good is that? I mean, our ideas and our likes and dislikes change constantly. But the problem is, without a standard, without an authority of some sort, which of course with me it's the Bible, you can just fluctuate at will. But the problem comes in with this specific issue. The Bible says everything reproduces after his kind.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in order for evolution to happen, it demands new kinds coming up from previous kinds.
Yes.
And that just violates Scripture. So if the God of the Bible is, in fact, the God of the universe and God Almighty himself.
But I'm going to use the timeline on you as you did me. What makes you think that we could see in our lifetimes or even several lifetimes the process of evolution, if evolution is true and took all that time, we wouldn't be able to see evolution at all. Maybe on the most on micro levels only, right?
Well, that's true. If it were true, that would be true. That's right. But the problem is, if in fact evolution has happened, we should be able to see it in the fossil record or somewhere down the line. You know, if you have a daughter or a son, and you take them to the local, you know, hardware store around Easter time, they have all these little ducks around, and you want to get a duck, you know, your kids just say, hey, Daddy, Daddy, I got to have one of these. And, okay, we'll get a couple of ducks. And you put that duck in your backyard, and
mm-hmm.
you feed it and water it, and
mm-hmm.
next thing you know, that thing is growing, and it starts to get a little airborne, and you clip the tips of the wings if you don't want it to fly. You know, two-thirds of a wing is absolutely useless. If you go fishing and you catch a bunch of fish and you're in a boat, you know, and you hook a stringer, but you don't hook through the, you know, the mouth of the fish, you actually go into the mouth and out the gill like a lot of people do, you put that fish in the water, that fish is going to drown because he needs that gill to function.
That's right.
You see, in order for evolution to happen, if everything in fact started in the water and then came out on land,
yes.
that is an enormous amount of change. So where are all these ones in the fossil record that couldn't survive and couldn't do it? And then some decided to go back to the water. Well, where are the ones? You see, you can't just, like they say, dinosaurs evolved into birds. Well, you know, a dinosaur has a three-chambered heart and a bird has a four-chambered heart. How in the world do you just develop this thing overnight and make it function?
Evolution.
Yeah. So where are the examples of the ones that didn't make it? I mean, it's absolutely impossible that all this stuff would just naturally just boom. It would immediately be there.
What do we have an appendix for?
Yeah, that comes up all the time, too. The whole vestigial organ, you know, type of argument.
I mean, what do we have? We don't need it, right? It's unneeded.
Well, it's not necessarily needed. But
they don't know of any function for the appendix.
Well, but that doesn't mean anything anyway. You know, just because... we learn new things.
What I'm suggesting is
time.
That perhaps at one time the appendix, in fact, had a function, and in modern man, it does not. So that may be the process of evolution before our very eyes. It's a possibility.
Well, that's the way an evolutionist would look at that, sure. But the way a creationist would look at that is, yeah, perhaps there was a function, a purpose. There was a different environment in the original creation. Perhaps it is a it has a function today, and we just don't really understand it yet.
Maybe.
But there are new things that science finds, you know, about us and about various things, you know, on a weekly basis.
Maybe the appendix produced dinosaur repellent once.
It could have done that.
Get over there and
argue
that side.
Well, let me give you an example of one that is in all the textbooks and it's very common, and that's the coccyx. And most biology textbooks will say that the coccyx is a leftover set of bones that has no present function.
Used to be a tail, right?
It's where our tail, that's why they call that thing a tailbone.
Yeah.
Well, it does have a very vital function. We met a little girl 9 years old just a few months back that was born without a coccyx.
And
this year, her mother had to finally pull her out of school, only been in school just a few years, and because she has to wear depends for the rest of her life, no matter how old she gets. She can't run and jump and sit, squat, play, sing,
right.
You know, seesaw, slide. She can't do all that stuff like most kids can. Now, she's alive, yes. But the problem is the textbooks say it's a vestigial organ and it has no function. And that's simply not true. There are a lot of important items that come together back in there.
Well, but there's an important thing here. As you all are aware, adults cannot reach certain parts of their back to scratch and or swat a fly or other bug from, right? There is, no matter how hard you try, there's one little, whether you go from this direction or this direction, there's one part of your back you can't get to.
That's why I have an alligator claw on a stick.
Well yeah, me too. I know. But see, at one point we might have had tails, and tails would have been perfect for that, particularly if they were a bit scaly. You could scratch or you could swat a fly or do anything you wanted with that tail.
Well, yeah, of course, evolution says you don't get something until you need it, but, you know, they say we lost our tail because we didn't need it. I mean,
that's what I'm getting at.
Anybody that has a child or has to unload something or is in construction or anything, I'm sure you wish you had two or three tails and an extra couple of hands here and there. You know, to say that we lost that thing because we didn't need it, that's just crazy.
Crazy.
The coccyx didn't house a tail. That's not where the tail came from once
upon a time. And if humans were in our lifetime to begin to be born without an appendix, that would mess with your theory, wouldn't it?
Oh, not necessarily. There are people that are born without appendix. There are people that are born without heads. I mean, you know,
But I mean as a natural course of events.
Well,
more and more babies began to be born without an appendix.
Well, it could happen, sure, but that doesn't...
That wouldn't prove anything, huh?
No, I mean, you know, people are born without things all the time and with things and extra hair. And I mean, there are problems in the... in the genetic code. We've got a lot of problems within our genetic code these days.
We do indeed. Steve, hold on. Steve Grohman, who is a Baptist minister, is my guest, and we're talking about creation. If you have any questions, and I know you do because the line has absolutely been going berserk since we began, you know the numbers. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM. All right. We are going back now to Steve Grohman. And Steve, where are you actually right now?
I am in the pastor's house at where we're holding the seminar this week.
Well, I mean, statewide.
Mount Carmel, Pennsylvania.
Mount Carmel, Pennsylvania.
Yeah,
all right.
Shamokin area.
Okay. Well, you're a really good sport. You've been doing really well, and I would like to open the lines and see what people have to say.
That sounds good. Can I give our email and phone number?
Of course
also,
you can. Yes, of
there's
course.
You know, there's so much, and, you know, we have, like I mentioned, 11 videotapes, and each of them are about 2 hours in length. Most of them are right on 2 hours. We use every inch of the tape. And,
right.
There's a whole wealth of information, but, again, the website is www.creationseminar.com.
Is it .com or .net?
.net. Well, we have both. We have .com and .net, but .com switches over to .net, so we'll go with .net.
All right.
And then the email is creation@creationseminar.net.
Right.
And a phone number is 603-837-2127.
Give that again, 603.
Right. 837. 2127.
2127.
And, they can, on the web, they can look it up. We're about 40 to 45 weeks out of the year. We're in a different church, different state each week. And,
right.
People can look to see where we're going to be and maybe come out and see us or give us a call or email or whatever and see a lot of the evidence that's out there.
Did you remember Brother Love's Travel and Salvation Show when I played that?
I did.
All right. Here we go to the phones. First time caller line, you're on the air with Steve Grohman. Where are you, please?
Yes, I'm in Miami. This is Ed in Miami.
Miami, Ed. All right.
Okay. I may seem a bit sporadic. In the King James Version, it states that in the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. Eternal life cannot be gotten through space travel, et cetera, but you must be born again. I know I'm a little bit dogmatic by saying this, but do you agree that the New Jerusalem is coming down from heaven to earth?
By the way, let me only just stop you long enough to say,
yes.
You are an example of what I've been complaining about on my telephone lines now for days. There's a kind of a crackle with your voice.
I'll talk a little bit louder.
No. You're loud enough. I'm just trying to point this out to my thick-headed phone company here in Nevada. Anyway,
we look up in space. It's a wonderment. And would you agree to me that you cannot receive eternal life through going in outer space in a spaceship? The New Jerusalem eventually will come down to Earth.
All right.
But not the heavens. There are no heavens. There's one heaven.
All right, Steve.
Well, yes, I would agree with you. And that's sort of the point we kind of ran out of time. I was trying to make earlier. If you see, without a standard, without an authority, then we're each at will to just believe whatever and however, and those beliefs can change and wishy-washy and all that.
Like me.
Well, I didn't want to say that.
That's all right. That's fine. Like me.
No, but see, the point is, like Ed is mentioning here, there are eternal consequences to this. And if, in fact, the Bible is true, and there is a God, and there is a God who expects certain things from us, then we have to do it His way. And we can like or not like that all we want and try to change that or whatever. And, so be it. But, yes, traveling out in space is not going to, give us eternal life or anything. And, that heaven, there you mentioned King James, in the beginning God created the heaven and the earth. Mm-hmm. And that's a good point because, the King James Bible was put together in 1611. And, everything, and the evolutionary mindset really flourished in the middle to late 1800s. And every other translation since then says, in the beginning God created the heavens. Plural, and the earth. And what they're doing is they're allowing for a period of time in there, which there should not be. And I find that very interesting that in a Bible that was printed and written before this evolutionary mindset, it has the singular heaven. And then later on in verse number 6 and 7, it describes where he divides up the heaven. And then in verse 16, he gives it a different name where the sun, moon, and stars are. In verse number 20, he gives it a different name slightly where the birds fly, our atmosphere.
This is a silly question to ask, but you obviously believe there is a heaven and a hell, yes?
Oh, absolutely.
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 And those people who have not received the word, the Christian word of God, will not go to the heaven, will they?
Well, those who have not received Jesus Christ as their Savior.
Will not go to heaven.
Will not go to heaven.
Well, that would be the majority of the people on earth today.
But isn't that amazing? You know, the Bible also describes that there is a narrow road that leads to heaven, eternity with God, and there's a broad path that leads into hell, into destruction. And that's exactly where we're at.
But why would a Buddhist who's never received the word, who's never accepted Jesus as Savior, why would a Buddhist who has been a good person in every other way that we can measure on earth, perhaps even better than a lot of the rest of these sinners out here, be taking that broad road down escalator to hell? It's just not an acceptable way. I can't wrap my mind around that, Steve.
Well, because that's a human way of looking at it. And you even said that in your when you were mentioning there, you said is good in our perspective and whatnot. But see, when up against an almighty, all loving definition of holy God, the slightest little sin is still sin. And there has to be a way to redeem that sin. And of course, if in fact there is a God, and I certainly believe there is, then he would lay out his plan as to how to redeem those sinners. And he did. And, we have to do it his way. If he's the creator, then he makes the rules. And we tend to not like those rules and say, well, I mean, we can always find somebody a little worse than I am to compare myself
sure,
to.
Sure, but
and,
the rules, you know, in a lot of cases don't seem to make sense. For example, a child who is born one day and dies the next. That soul has not received the word of Jesus, nor has embraced Jesus as Savior. Doesn't know.
Well, there's specific examples of that in the Bible too, though, where you know, until you reach a certain age where you are accountable,
yeah.
Where there is no law, there's no transgression, and you know, a child who knows not anything of the sort, and there's no way he could know, God will not hold that against him. Again, he's a just God, and
well, but he doesn't let Muslims in.
Well, see, there's an interesting point here that we tend not to think of much. And again, if in fact the Bible is the Word of God,
yeah.
And I certainly believe it is,
yes.
Then and if it's true, and I certainly believe it is, if everybody started from Adam and Eve,
yes.
And then everybody got through the flood through Noah and his family,
mm-hmm.
In every person on this earth, past, present, and future, everybody in their genealogy, in their line, they came from the truth. And somewhere along those lines, they've departed from that. So it's not God's fault that somebody has departed from that line. It's our fault because we have been given free choice and we make bad choices. But nevertheless, it's not God's fault. But yet he did see fit to record the whole creation, the whole issue, and the salvation issue.
Why would God not have sent perhaps many representatives, as in,
well, because the Bible says
Buddha, Allah.
Well, because the Bible says that
only sent Jesus, right?
You're right. He's the only begotten Son, and in fact, Acts 4:12 says, "Neither is there salvation in any other."
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are just many, many examples. He could have done whatever he wanted to do. I mean, he's God; he can do whatever he wants.
All right, look, I'm ignoring these callers. I've got to let them on. Wild Card Line, you're on the air with Steve Grohman. Hi.
Hi, I got a line of questioning, and which will eventually lead back to the creation. And
well, it's going to have to do it fairly rapidly.
I'll be concise, and I would appreciate concise answers. But on what you just said, Jesus was asked, "What about those who have not heard of you?" And Jesus said, "All of creation testifies to me."
Right.
So therefore, I think there are people who have never heard of the Bible, never heard of the name of Jesus, but know of Jesus and will be saved anyway. They know of him by spirit, but not by word.
Well, there are...
I don't want to get into that. I really want to stay
okay.
To the topic of creationists.
All right.
I am a fundamental Bible-believing Christian. And, however, I am not a literalist. I think that there is metaphor and simile and allegory used in the Bible. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
Okay. Do you also believe that there are generalities used in the Bible? Not specifics, but general, just
sure.
Generalities.
Sure.
Okay. Let me just cite one real quick example. Back in Genesis 5, it says, when Noah was 500 years old, he bore three sons. In Genesis 6, it says that, 1 year after the flood, which we know was 100 years old, 100 years long, Japheth, had his 100th birthday. Therefore, Japheth was born in the year Noah 502, correct? So when the Bible says that when Noah was 500 years old, he bore three sons, it was a generality. Are you with me?
Okay, yeah, I think I understand where you're going, yes.
Okay, now, when we get to Genesis and the 6 days, are you aware in Hebrew that there are three uses for the word, the Hebrew word day, even as we use them today?
Yes.
The first use of the word day is from sunrise to sunset.
About 30 seconds, sir.
The second use is from sunset to sunset, and the third use is a period of time.
Right, except in the Hebrew language, any time an ordinal is assigned to it, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, it's always a 24-hour day period.
It can be also the first period and can be a generality. And the time elements were not given to the Bible until the 19th century by a Catholic priest who went by the genealogy and he didn't know Hebrew, that the names ending in M or N, I don't remember, were plurals, so they were whole tribes.
All right, so in other words, if I have this correctly, he's saying that a day could have been more than a day, basically. It
could have been millions of years. The day-age theory is what that's called, and whenever it's used with an ordinal, with a number, it's always a 24-hour day, you know, just like we have now. But also, God qualified each and every one with and the evening and the morning. He brought it around. He used the word day. He qualified it with a revolution, and he qualified it with a number, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and rested on the seventh. And, of course, plants aren't going to live millions of years without the sun, and the sun was made on day four, but the plants on day three. And, so there are many examples of how that's not a valid argument. And verse number 14 talks about the sun, moon, and stars were put there for signs and for seasons, for the days and years. Well, if a day in Genesis 1 is really millions of years, then what in the world is a year?
Mm-hmm.
See, all of a sudden, verse number 14 has absolutely no meaning. In order to be consistent, we need to be consistent. Because in the end of Genesis 1, it says that man and all animals, everything on the earth was created vegetarian. Well, in order for that to be, then, you cannot have had millions of years of bloodshed and fighting and eating and all of that kind of stuff, because it very clearly says that everything that was put here was vegetarian. So obviously, you can't have those long periods of time in there.
All right. Steve, you have been a pleasure to have on the air. I want to give out your information again, all right?
Yes.
And you're going to get plenty of email. Your email address is?
creation@creationseminar.net.
Yes. And your telephone number is
603-837-2127.
And I think we have a link to your website on my website right now, which will help people in the short term.
Great.
But otherwise, it is creationseminar.net.
Correct.
Now, you say there are pictures of dinosaurs on that site.
Yes, sir. It's when you get to our site, it says Meet Our Dinosaurs.
And Meet Our Dinosaurs. Does it really say that?
So you click on that thing, and they'll jump right out at you.
Now, are these legible, non-fuzzy?
Oh yeah, they're clear. They're certainly
dino photos.
They're absolutely decent photos. It'll be a joy.
Yes, indeed. Well, it has been a joy having you on, and we are going to have you on again.
Well, that sounds wonderful.
And I presume that I can sort of catch you as you preach cross-country.
Absolutely. We always check with our messages, and, after this show, we're going to probably have to check our messages every 15 minutes, I suppose. Otherwise, the machine will fill up, right?
That's right. You're going to have a lot of messages, all right.
We have a lot of resource materials that can help folks, scoffers and believers, either way. And
now, I'm not a scientist, but I know a lot of scientists, and
right.
What I would like to do is perhaps arrange a show with a scientist of some sort and yourself.
That would be fun.
Would you be up for that?
Absolutely. We'd love to do that.
All right. Then that's what I'm going to work on, Steve.
That sounds wonderful.
All right. Well, you've been wonderful. Thank you very much for coming on the program.
Well, thank you, sir, for having me.
And good night.
Good night.
All right. That's it for now. We've got 2 hours of open lines directly ahead. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM. How you doing this morning? Here we go. Anything goes. You name it. We'll talk about it. There's a lot of news to talk. Oh, by the way, I was talking to Linda Moulton Howe earlier in the evening, and this next Tuesday she's going to do a show with me. And you know what she mentioned? She mentioned the coming effort to drill down into the Antarctic, or maybe the Arctic, but I think the Antarctic, and come up with organisms that existed some 30 to 40 million years ago, my guests, previous guests' views aside on this issue, and go get those organisms. And Linda's a pretty straight shooter, you know, she's science all the way, and I said, God, Linda, you've got to be kidding. I said, I was talking about this on the air the other night, and I think it's the dumbest damn idea I've ever heard of, and she laughed. You don't get a laugh from Linda all that frequently, but she laughed. And so I think she's working very hard on that story, and I think we're all going to find that a particularly interesting program. That'll be next week on Tuesday evening, Linda Monhow. This idea of drilling down to get organisms. And she's also going to do a rather extensive report on the encephalitis situation. And it's worse than you think. We'll have a complete report for you on Tuesday with Linda Monhow. Now, tomorrow night on the program, it's going to be Stan and Holly Dale. Stan Dale, and this time with his lady in hand on the phone, Stan and Holly Dale are going to be here, and they've got quite a bit to say. They'll be here. They're, we call Australia to do this one. First hour, Colm Kelleher from NIDS, the Bigelow organization, and or sponsored organization, I guess I ought to say. And then following that tomorrow night will be Stan and Holly Dale. You don't want to miss that, from Australia, live, assuming we can get a good connection. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Tally-ho.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
This is Mike Holm from Philly.
Philly, Philadelphia. Yes, sir.
I have a question for you, and I hope you don't get pissed off at me.
All right, I'll try not to.
I've heard that Masons worship Satan. Is that true?
I can't answer that.
Oh,
you wanted an honest answer, right?
Yes.
I can't answer it. I don't know.
Are you a Mason?
I refuse to answer that.
Oh, okay. You're not Miami, are you?
I beg your pardon?
You're not Miami, I answered that question, are you?
Not at all.
Oh, okay.
Not at all. Do you think I'm a Mason?
I think I heard that you were, yes.
That's floating around out there, you know.
Oh.
I mean, it's really floating around out there.
I'm sorry.
Well, don't be so. I'm not sorry. I don't care.
Okay.
These sorts of things float around. People like Matt Drudge catch them all the time.
Yeah. Anyway, I love your show, and I went on night work so I could hear you every night.
Did you really?
Yes.
Well, then I'm very honored. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
I wish I could answer your question. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello, Art.
Hello, where are you?
Mount Rainier, Washington.
Uh-huh.
My name is Walter.
Yes, Walter.
Yeah, I was calling to say I've had a dream. I've had a kind of an out-of-body experience like you had, except mine was I was told that I was having seizures. Well, actually, I was. During my sleep, I would wake up in a semi-conscious state and just flopping around like a convulsion. And anyway, before I would wake up sometimes, I'd be like I was in a dream and I was being pulled up towards the ceiling. And I'd wake up, I know it's the same as your, or similar to yours, because I'd have a loud, loud roar in my head. I don't know if this is familiar to you.
But no, anyway, I didn't have a loud roar. I had the only way I can put it to you is I had absolute bliss. And words do not, believe me, do justice to what I felt. And it was so fast.
Well, okay, well then, see now mine, I was trying to get rid of it. I thought that it was so horrible, the hallucinations while I was sleeping and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did get over it, and the way I did was I found out it was fear of God. I'd wake up almost so terrified I wish I was dead. So finally, one time I says, God, if you're here, you must be insane. I hate you. I can't stand you. I said, I'm going to die anyway. What the heck? And so finally I figured out that if there is a God, he would be able to understand my terrible fear at the time and would know that I was irrational or not irrational, but, you know, wondering what's going on. And after
not
that,
really meaning what you were saying.
Yeah, except that even if I was thinking I was meaning what I was saying or close to it, he would understand the tremendous the frailties that we have. And after that, I had no more fear of God, in a sense, and I never, and the tremendous fear, see, because me thinking that I was going to die seemed to amplify my situation 1,000,000%.
Mm-hmm.
After that, I had no more fear of it. And it was, and I had no more seizures, or like I was taken off towards the ceiling. I felt like I was going to be smashed right up against the ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
But it came out to be fear of God. But anyway, I just wanted to tell you, for me, that's how close I came. It sounded like it was like yours.
Well, I appreciate the call, sir. And I, who is to say they are all the same? They're not, I'm sure. I simply described what I had. It was instantaneous. It was unwanted, unsolicited. There was no warning. I had no control over it when it came, when it went. It just happened. While I was on vacation in Paris. A very romantic place, I might add, for something like that to occur. On my first time caller line, you are on the air. Hello. Going once, going twice, gone. Wild card line, you're on the air. Cheerio.
Hello, Art.
Yes.
This is Gordon in St. Louis.
Hi, Gordon.
I guess I know how you're doing. You're on the air, so.
Yeah, that's right.
Wow, nationwide, we can talk about anything.
Anything.
Anything. Okay, well, first of all, I wanted to say best wishes to Terrence McKenna.
Yes, of course.
And he's just cool. And then I'd like to, I don't know, I kind of miss Father Martin.
We all do. You know, let me tell you how abysmal some self-proclaimed God-fearing people are. I get these emails saying Terrence McKenna is being punished by God for what he did, the drugs he took. That's what they're saying.
That's pretty vindictive.
Yeah, but does it surprise you?
No, I mean, because vindictive people don't really surprise me. I mean, usually it's just a cover for some insecurity or something like that, and we got plenty of those, you know, around.
Yeah, we've got plenty of those, all right.
Okay, well, anyway, I remember one time I asked Father Martin, I asked him from Idaho, I asked him, does the Antichrist know who he or she is? And he said, yeah. And I said, well, how? And I remember the only answer he would give is by their parentage, which was really weird. I don't know, I'd like to hear what do you think about that. But as far as like a conversation with your last guest that you just had.
Yes.
I don't know the name of the author that wrote Forbidden Archaeology. You've had him on a few times.
Michael Cremo.
Okay, there you go. Because,
yes.
See, the thing is neither one of them buy into the mainstream science.
You are quite correct. Absolutely correct. But they are miles and miles and miles apart. And miles and miles and miles and miles apart. In other words, Michael Cremo believes that there is archaeological evidence that would indicate there were civilizations prior to the one that we are now participating in. And that archaeological evidence is shelved when it doesn't fit into the paradigm of those who dig it up out of the ground. So there's a mile of difference, but yes, they both disagree. West of the Rockies, you are on the air. Hello.
Great, thank you. I was on hold trying to catch a previous guest, and intervention stepped in, apparently.
Must have been the hand of God.
Apparently. Anyone who doesn't believe in evolution obviously hasn't been listening to your show and watched it evolve over the last several years into the wonderful creation we all enjoy now.
You think it has evolved, that's true.
I've heard it. I had a couple of really quick holes to poke in the standard creationist argument, but first I wanted to confront Mr. Grohman on his alleged dinosaur that he apparently takes with him in his motorhome.
Well, four of them, actually. And on top of that, you can go look on the website and see the dinos.
What that is, you have friends, contacts in Australia. In Australia, that's known as a Jesus lizard. It flares its neck flaps out, which help it in cooling and makes it look bigger to its enemies, rears up on its hind legs, runs a little ways across water.
Like a dinosaur.
It looks like the little dinosaurs in Jurassic Park, but it's just a lizard with big flaps for cooling, like an elephant's ears. The blood.
How long has it been around?
It's been, who knows? It evolved from some earlier form of reptile, like we all did, but it's been around forever and ever.
Well, maybe given enough time, though, it will grow into a great big dinosaur.
Well, it's entirely possible, but it's still a reptile, and they're perfectly common. You can buy them in pet stores. If he's selling
I understand. I thought his argument, though, was fairly interesting. Given enough time, as the Bible said we once had, they would have grown because they continue to grow.
Well, there were dinosaurs back, well, okay, well, another thing I was going to bring up is we're watching evolution take place with us right now. The average height of Romans was, I think, about 5'2 to 5'4.
Were they that short?
I think so.
Wow.
5'6 would have been a really tall man, even up into the 1800s.
Well, they were pretty pushy for people that short.
Well, they had attitude.
They did have attitude, yeah.
We're getting taller as time goes by. That's how giraffes got their long necks. Millions of years, people like your guest won't accept the concept of slow change over millions of years.
I know.
The biggest problem with the missing link thing that they always throw up is, you know, the old saw that you can never cross a room completely if you keep dividing the remaining space in half.
That says you'll never get there, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's the problem. And there's also another lizard in Australia you might ask your friend next time you talk to him called the goanna.
Well, I'm going to have tomorrow night, I'm going to have Stan and Holly Dale on from Australia. How about if I ask them?
I would love to get in because they have a lizard there that has developed a light-sensitive organ under a scale in the top of its head that's like a primitive third eye that's sensitive to light and color.
Hmm.
And they also, the creationists always say you can't invent an eye out of nothing because there was no need for it. Well, there's a lizard in Australia that seems to be evolving a third eye for some reason.
That's it.
Three of my favorite things in the world, your show, the best bumper music and talk radio, and the creation evolutionary flap. I just want
to tell you. Bumper music is evolving.
It keeps its character, and we have similar tastes. I won $1,000 from a friend of mine last week on Rhomopithecus, the fossil.
Really?
And the deadbeat won't pay up. Yeah, so I hope he's listening tonight because I'm coming after him.
I got you. All right. $1,000. Oh, boy. All right, east of the Rockies, you're on the air, top of the morning.
Hi, Art.
Hello. Turn your radio off.
Oh, I already did.
All right.
With your previous guest, Steve.
Yes.
Is he a prime example of what the governor from Minnesota had in mind?
I like the governor of Minnesota. I would like to interview the governor of Minnesota, as a matter of fact. I think Jesse Ventura is, I should have asked him about Jesse because I'm sure he's very unhappy with Jesse. But frankly,
unhappy with Jesse?
I don't know. We'd have to ask Jesse that. But I found that I more or less agree with him, and I bet that really rubbed you the wrong way.
Well, I'm talking about Steve, the guest that you had on.
Oh, I see.
The weakness of organized religion. What was Steve his prime example? Because I only agreed with one-tenth of what that man had to say.
About a tenth, huh?
Yeah.
I'm in agreement with you. I mostly disagree with that very strict creationist biblical view of things. And, you know, maybe I'm going to burn and you are too for that.
No, I go by the Bible.
If they're
not
right.
Not by the pulpit.
Well.
And not by Steve.
Well, and not by Steve, I know, but from Steve is only his representative, you must understand, of millions of people, not just Steve. There are
no, but I don't want his non-words to be...
The gospel?
Yeah, for me to listen to.
Well, it's good to listen to. No, it's really good to listen
You're laughing.
So
it is not good to listen to.
Yes, it
to
is
you.
Good. Yes, it is, too. It is,
I'm
too.
I'm laughing.
Millions of people believe what Steve believes. And by the way, I don't...
That is why organized religion is weak.
Well, that may well be.
Sorry, Art.
That may be.
You're the boss. You talk.
No, look. I think it's good to listen to. So that when I talk about how the fundamentalists are going to react to something,
mm-hmm.
you understand, when you listen to Steve, why I'm right about that. In other words, if they arrive and there is a confrontation with them, and people like Steve discover there are others, their faith will be so shaken that our entire world this United States and beyond will be turned upside down. That's why I wanted to have Steve on. Do you understand?
Well, I got it. That's why I called you.
Yeah.
Talk to you later, Art.
Romans with attitude, huh? Do you hear that?
Which verse? Chapter?
No. Little Romans, you know, little guys. Little guys, big attitudes. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Open lines. Anything you want to talk about is absolute fair game.
Don't people got no reason? Don't people got no reason? Don't people got no reason to live? They got little hands, little eyes. They walk around telling big, big lies. They got little noses, tiny little feet. Yeah, well, that's bullshit.
North Philadelphia, Detective Romanita King said, workers had been knocking down the chimney Saturday when they smelled a truly foul odor. When they got closer, they noticed a pair of sneakers,
my God,
jeans, and a Phillies cap, and what looked to be human remains, said King. Quote, it appears that he got stuck trying to enter the place through the chimney to rob it, end quote. Police found a welfare card in the man's wallet, suspected he was a wanted burglar with many aliases. And King said he might have been there 5 years. 5 years. The medical examiner's office tentatively listed the cause of death as accidental compression asphyxia. Accidental compression asphyxia. In other words, translation, he got stuck and somebody started a fire. King said the store had been closed for many years. The construction crew had been renovating the property for its new owners. Said the remains may be at least 5 years old. Exactly when the business was closed is now unknown. Medical examiner's office will be conducting tests to definitely determine if the remains are those, in fact, of the suspected burglar. That's got to be a definite contender. Somebody sent me this, claiming this was a lesson from raising their children. And you thought raising children was easy. Things I have learned, Art, from raising my children. Honest. No kidding here. 1. There is no such thing as child-proofing your house. 2. If you spray hairspray on dust bunnies and run over them with roller blades, they ignite. A 4-year-old's voice is louder than 200 adults in a crowded restaurant. That. If you hook a dog leash over a ceiling fan, the motor is not strong enough to rotate a 42-pound boy wearing hound puppy underwear and a Superman cape. It is, however, strong enough to spread paint on all 4 walls of a 20-by-20-foot room. Baseballs make marks on ceilings. You should not throw baseballs up when the ceiling fan is on. When using the ceiling fan as a bat, you have to throw the ball up a few feet a few times before you actually get a hit. And a ceiling fan can hit a baseball a very long way. Furthermore, the glass in windows, even double pane, does not stop a baseball hit by a ceiling fan. When you hear the toilet flush and the words, uh-oh, it's already too late. Brake fluid mixed with Clorox makes smoke, and a lot of it at that. This must be a parent who's really gone through it. A 6-year-old can start a fire with a flint rock, even though a 36-year-old man says they can only do it in the movies. That's true. A magnifying glass can start a fire even on an overcast day. If you use a waterbed at home while wearing baseball shoes,
It does not leak. It explodes. A king-size waterbed holds enough water to fill a 2,000-square-foot house 4 inches deep. Legos will pass through the digestive tract of a 4-year-old. Duplos, whatever those are, will not. Play-Doh and microwave should never be used in the same sentence. Super glue is forever. I know about that one, and it goes on. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Yeah, this is Dean from Tampa.
Hello, Dean.
Yeah, I called you. I sent you a letter a few months ago. I found a thing about that triangle thing you've seen.
The triangle thing I've seen.
Yeah, that flying triangle.
Yes.
And I sent you like a print of some website I found that had like they were selling the flying triangle. Did you ever get that?
No, I didn't. Because I'd like to buy one. Were they really expensive? Or?
I think it was like $1,200. It was a small, remote-controlled device.
Mine was 150 feet from one point of the triangle to the other, minimum.
Yeah. Well, this was like a remote-controlled one, but it was like it was working on that same principle. I don't know. It was.
Anti-gravity?
Yeah, the site was futurehorizons.net. It's kind of hard to find on the search engines, but actually, the whole thing is .net/grab.htm. If you're
actually
the site.
Well, I'd sort of rather you didn't give those out like that.
Oh, okay.
I've had bad luck with that.
Yeah.
Go to extra sites and then I.
Yeah, I sent you that though. If you got it in the mail, it was like about 2 months ago. I mailed you.
Well, I'm trying
out at the page.
Trusting you here.
Yeah. So maybe they'll send you back mail and you look through it.
Yeah.
And also, I was wondering, does any other states have this? Like Tampa has this, again, like 20 miles away from the city. I can't get any of the stations AM around here. After the sun goes down, they have like some law in the state. We have to turn their power down real low.
I know. Well, no, actually, it's the other way around. They allow them to turn power up, and that's all because of Cuba. If the stinking Bay of Pigs had succeeded, we wouldn't be having all this problem right now. This is because the Cubans are transmitting hundreds of thousands of watts on our AM frequencies. And they can hear me down there in Cuba. You rotten socialist communist pigs, quit it. And let our Florida stations radiate.
Yeah, because I got to listen to you from, like, North Carolina now.
Yeah.
And also, another weird thing is, like, I don't really know Spanish too well, but it was, like, I was having an old 50s car, and it has, like, that civil defense symbol on it, you know?
Yes.
If you go to, like, the 640 channel, you get this real strong, I'm pretty sure it's Cuban channel, because I hear Cuba on the banner a lot on that channel.
I know. I appreciate your call, sir. I'm sorry. I don't know what to tell you. They have no regard whatsoever for broadcast regulation, international or otherwise, and they broadcast wherever they want with as much power as they want. And so the Federal Communication Commission, commiserating with the Florida stations, actually allows them to run more power at night so they can be heard over the communist voices emanating from the island. It's a lousy situation, and I don't know. You can't live forever. International line, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes, hello.
Where are you?
Yes. Well, I'm calling from Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada.
All right.
And
we have an echo here. Turn your radio off. That's very important. Now let me see if I can get rid of the echo. Say
okay.
Something. Oh, that's better.
Well, I'm so happy I got through. My name is Val, and that's short for Valentine. And I want to tell you about a dream that I had about a month ago.
I'm not a dream interpreter.
No, but I just want to tell the listening audience, okay?
What is your dream?
All right. Well, okay, I was kind of listening to the radio, and I was kind of sleeping, and I was really sleeping when I had this dream.
Yeah.
And I dreamt that my dead brother called from the other side.
Oh?
And I was listening to him on the phone.
Yes.
And he sounded like himself when I remember talking to him last time. That was about 2.5 years ago, and he called from the other side, and he goes, "Hello, bro, how's it going, bud? Hey, guess who this is?" And I said, "Is it Dan?" He said, "No, it's your brother Rob." He says, "Hey, guess who's next?" And I said, "Who, me?" And he says, "Hey, that's for you to find out." And he was laughing, like as if he was all happy and everything like that, you know?
Like he knew that you were about to join him?
Yeah, something like that.
But see, I always thought on the other side there would be no real time as we understand it here. So
Though your brother may have been chuckling, it could still be a good 50, 60 years before he meets up with you or you.
Yeah, it could be. But when I woke up, I wasn't even scared. I wasn't even afraid. Because, like, I thought, okay, it sounds like him. He sounds like he's laughing and just like he's joking and just the way he used to be, like carefree and everything.
You know what
like
actually
that.
Bothers me about this more than anything else?
What?
I can't even call New York without getting an all circuits busy. How does somebody get through from the other side?
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea. It's just that I had that dream.
Well, I'll tell you what you do. You call the phone company and let me know what they tell you.
Okay.
Right. Most of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Yeah, Art Bell?
That's me.
Hey. I got two the first time. Hey, listen, my name's Ed, Art.
Ed.
Ed.
Where are you, Ed?
Humboldt County.
All right.
You know
Humboldt County, isn't that the marijuana growing capital of the United States?
Yeah, it's probably.
That's what I've heard.
Probably pretty good. That's where your buddies are down in Fortuna.
That's right.
Yeah. C.C. Crane. Listen, I have a couple questions. That last guest was something else. But, listen, I'm really into amateur radios.
Yes.
And,
do you have a license?
No, that's what I'm working on.
Good for you.
And, Morse code is hard.
Well.
I'm going for the general ticket.
Well. Look, a lot of things that are worth it in life are hard.
That's true.
So hang in there.
My question to you is do you have any recommendations for a fixed amplified antenna
for a what kind of antenna?
A fixed shortwave listening antenna that where I don't have to string a long wire or dipole?
Yes. There are several very good ones on the market. They're generally expensive. The disadvantage or downside to an amplified antenna is that you get a much, much higher noise level than you would otherwise. But it does allow you to hear things that you would not hear otherwise. So if you live in an apartment or something, yes, Bob Grain has some really good amplified antennas that will work really well.
Does he?
Yep.
Okay. I thought about overloading. Would that overload a sensitive receiver?
Well, if you've got a good receiver, it's got an RF gain control on it, so turn it down.
That's true.
Okay.
All right, thanks, Art.
In the meantime, get cracking on the code, and good luck to you. The way, by the way, to get to 13 words per minute, which is required for the general class license, is not to begin at 5 words per minute. Actually begin at 13 words a minute, and you will think it's impossible at first, but your brain actually has an easier time assimilating 13 words per minute eventually, then it does getting 5 words a minute, and then slowly trying to work your way to 13. You will then reach mental blocks, which some people cannot surpass. So actually begin at 13 and stay at 13, and you've got a better chance. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. No, you're not. West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello. Extinguish your radio, please.
Okay.
That's good.
Is this Art?
Yes.
Hi, my name is Maya. I'm calling from Ashland, Oregon.
Okay.
And my question to you is, like, I'm a pregnant woman.
You're pregnant?
Yeah. I'm, like, 3 months.
Are you happy about that?
I guess so.
Are you glowing?
Huh?
Are you glowing?
Am I glowing? Sometimes. I'm still, like, having morning sickness and stuff like that.
By the way, I want to point out to my phone company, here's another example of what I'm talking about, the little crackle that I'm getting with you on your voice.
You're getting a crackle?
Yeah, a little crackle every now and then. Anyway, so morning sickness, is that part over now?
Huh?
Is that part over now?
Oh, it's starting to leave, but, uh-huh. Yeah. I mean, I'm 10 weeks.
10 weeks.
Yeah.
So you've probably been up chucking on a pretty regular basis.
That's true. My question is to you. I mean, I've been, like, reading about out-of-body experiences, and I've had some pretty trippy dreams, you know, about, like, traveling through the United States and stuff. And I was wondering if it would be safe for me to do something like that while I'm pregnant.
Hmm.
You know, because
you know, all
I think
the
of
questions,
two souls.
All the questions that I have asked of my various guests who are experts in this area, you just hit me with one that I have never asked. Would it be safe for you to travel out of body?
Yeah, I know, like with all the
I think they would say yes. Let me tell you what they would say. They would say that your bodily functions, the blood pumping, the heart pumping, the breathing, all of that, the physical things, continue to go on with your body as normal, though your soul or your spirit, depending on how you want to think of it, leave your body. So I think they would answer, yes, it is safe, but don't take my word for it.
Yeah, because, I mean, I don't know, because there's two souls in me. That's
one thing for
I
sure, I'd try to leave before I threw up in the morning.
I keep crackers by my bed to fill my stomach. That's why you get sick, because, like, an empty stomach.
So then when you do lose it, it's cracker
leaving.
Yeah. You know, I think I've got a picture. All right, well, thank you and good luck to you. On the first time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm calling Art Bell, right?
Well, what do you think?
Well, I hear Art Bell in the background, and he's talking to some woman that's pregnant about out-of-body experience.
That's true. That's what I was doing. Let's see, is there a delay system? And you have your radio on, and you ought not be listening to that when you're calling.
Well, I should go turn her off.
Yes, immediately.
What if I move into the kitchen and you can't even hear her?
Well, I don't know. Maybe. Move into the kitchen.
Okay. Can't hear her.
There are many who would say that's where you belong anyway.
In the kitchen?
I wouldn't be one of those.
Is this Art?
Yes.
Art, I am a first-time caller, but I'm a fan of yours forever and ever and ever. I listened to you on KLMO in Seattle.
Seattle.
For like 3 years. When I was in my early 20s, moved down to Portland. I listened to you on whatever they call the powerhouse of the...
KEX.
KEX.
Yes.
And moved back to Seattle. Now I'm in Nevada.
You're here in Nevada.
Hard to get you on our little...
Where are you in Nevada?
105, Henderson.
Henderson. Well, you ought to be able to get 105.1.
Well,
although they do have a little dead spot out there.
Yeah, well, it's hard to get you. I can get you on my stereo.
Yeah.
Can't get you on the alarm clock.
Well, but you need a good antenna. You know, you need to put up a little Yagi. It'll be clear as a bell.
We live in an apartment.
Oh. Well, you can actually put a Yagi in a closet. Get a small FM Yagi and put it in a closet. It'll work.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Anyhow, I'm calling you. I don't know why. I'm just... My fiancé that I've moved around the Northwest with and now here is on graveyard shift, and I can't sleep at night. And you've helped me go to sleep every night for years and years and years, and I can't go to sleep without him. So,
Me or your fiancé?
Both of you.
Both of us. So, in other words,
neither of you are here.
Without your fiancé being there, you turn on the radio.
I turn on the radio, and here you are.
I took the picture, yes.
So I have some questions for you.
Have you told him about us?
He knows about me and you.
Okay.
We have all of your books, one of them signed. What are the benefits to living in the desert again? Could you please brief me?
The benefits to living in the desert?
Yes.
Isolation.
Isolation.
Privacy.
Okay, so we need to...
Quiet. Clean air.
It's not
clean water.
Okay, well, we moved to... He's got a great job with a new airline out of the airport. You may or not... I'm not going to say, but...
Well, you mean McCarran 2000?
No, he's working at McCarran with a new airline.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Okay. We moved to an apartment that cost a heck of a lot more than living in Seattle.
Mm.
And I have a view of airplanes flying over the house, and I know what the exhaust from them is going to do to my skin and my body.
Is that what your fiancé told you?
No. No, we moved here, and I used to live right by SeaTac Airport.
So, in other words... You're an exhaust child.
I'm an exhaust child. I'm used to the airport noise. But I'm living right across from a 24-hour lounge and a 24-hour gun pawn shop.
Really?
And when I listen to Art Bell, there's a thing on the commercial on the radio for a 24-hour cabaret with naked girls.
You mean on the... Really?
Yeah, on the commercial.
On the station that I'm carried on?
Yes.
I've never been told about that.
There's two different ones.
So they advertise naked girls on my show?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
And easy to get. One has red hair, some girl has red hair and she's easy to get to, and oh, it's so sticking. But anyhow, so, what are the benefits to living in the desert again?
Well, I don't know.
Oh, okay.
You're away from the red-haired girl.
Oh, I've been to Area 51 recently.
Yes. Yes.
That was a nice day trip.
The benefits to living in the desert are many, too many to articulate here. I thank you for the call. Let's break here at the top of the hour. We will return, I think. You never know, right, Matt? This is Coast to Coast AM.
Yeah. Double six, I will excite. So make you dream of me at night.
From the archives of Coast to Coast AM, Art Bell describes a rather unfortunate on-air situation.
I've got next to me what's called a cart rack. It's an affair with slotted little holes that hold the commercials and the bumper music and all that sort of thing. It came apart during the break, and several, you know, a bunch of carts fell down. As a matter of fact, I've got them all down here. And so I thought I would fix it, and I ran into the other room and got a container of super glue. And I guess I hadn't put the top back on it, so I took a pair of scissors right here, and I cut the top off the super glue to get it to flow. Well, it flowed all right. It flowed all over me. So I tried to pick it off, but it was still flowing on my finger. And I think that I've glued my lips together. This is the dumbest thing that I've ever done by a country mile.
Let's go to the international line. You're on the air. Good morning.
Hi there.
Hi there.
Calling for Art.
Well, bingo. That's me. Where are you?
I'm in Winnipeg.
Winnipeg, Manitoba. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
I'm actually beginning to learn about Canadian geography.
Hmm. Right above North Dakota.
I know. Yeah. Scary. I never knew a thing about Canada. Now I'm learning so much.
Yeah. See, you said we can call in about just about anything.
That's right.
You complained about the phone company. I don't know. You got different phone companies, but I've been having some problems with my tone emitter. And I was just putting out a general question. If anybody else has had
your
problems.
Your tone emitter?
Uh-huh. For the telephone.
What do you mean your tone emitter? You mean like,
well,
you mean like the touch tone? You mean that?
Well, like a key pulse tone emitter.
You mean like when you hit a number on the dial tone, right?
Well, not exactly.
Well, are you a? Oh, you're not one of those guys, are you?
I just want to know if anybody else has a problem, because just these couple weeks since you've been complaining, I don't even know. Maybe it's a Y2K testing thing. Who knows?
You're not a hacker, are you? Yes, you are.
No, I wouldn't call myself that.
You're a hacker.
No, that's for computers, sir.
Well,
there's different.
You're a phone freaker then.
Well, that's a more suitable name.
So they've done something to screw you up, huh?
That has a negative connotation to it. I believe that's a word. But just a general question: if anybody else has problems with them, because yeah, you know, them phone companies always giving people troubles.
Oh, endlessly.
And
endlessly, the phone company. You know. I'm going through hell right now with the phone company. I have this problem that is sporadic, and I tell them about it, and they send a guy out. He comes out, and he goes, nothing wrong here. And he leaves, and that's that. You know, I don't get anywhere. No one listens to me.
Mm-hmm. Just not to get into a little bit of discussion here, but I had a problem with him, and every time it would rain outside or snow lots,
yeah.
I'd have a complete static come over my line.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's moisture in the lines. That's
uh-huh.
That's
and
very
you know,
usual.
I got them out here, and of course, they don't come out when it's poor weather. They come out and say, oh, it looks fine to me. I don't know what the problem is.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I try and tell them, well, the problem is when you're not here, and the other half of the problem is that you don't come when it's bad.
Well, you just keep playing with those tones. They'll come see you.
Yeah.
See you later.
Thanks.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello. This is Jeff from Las Vegas. Let me turn down my radio here.
Thank you, Jeff.
All right. This is Art.
Yes.
Hey, how you doing?
Reasonable.
I was calling about that ad you're talking about, the cigarette ad, talking about aliens.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was in the print media in about 3 different newspapers around the country, maybe more.
Yeah, I never saw that, but
Why do you think they would do that?
Well, basically, it's funny. I mean, you got to just, like, lighten up about it. I mean, I believe in UFOs. I've seen a couple weird things in my life, but I mean, it's just humor. They're just selling humor. People think that's funny, and they notice the name on the ad, and they want to buy the product.
It could be nothing more than that. But
I think that's all it is.
Really like to have a representative of the company on, R.J. Reynolds,
uh-huh.
to explain their strategy.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it's deeper.
I don't know. I'm pretty sure it's just humor. I mean, lots of companies do that.
Well, I think with their markets beginning to fail a little bit here in the U.S.,
yeah.
that they're anticipating this great new galactic market myself.
Uh-huh.
And so they're playing up to the aliens.
Could be. Another thing. Did you see that rocket launch the other day?
The Vandenberg launch?
Yeah.
No, it really ticked me off. It was due to go Friday.
Uh-huh.
And we stood out in Washford on Friday at 7 o'clock Pacific time.
Yeah.
And it didn't go. And then I went to sleep early Saturday, and I woke up, and everybody said, oh, my God, you missed the Vandenberg shot.
Yeah. I didn't know it was coming or anything. I just walked outside, looked up there, and holy cow.
Yep.
It was like going up in the air.
I know.
It was quite a sight.
What rockets do.
Yeah.
All right, sir. Thank you.
Okay.
Take care. Yeah, it was quite a shot. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, is this Art Bell?
Yes.
Art, hi.
Hi.
I'm calling from Toronto, Canada.
Toronto?
Yeah. Yeah, my name is Bruce. And, sorry, just a little bit shocked to get through this easy.
No, here you are.
Here I am, yeah. I quite like your show, at least some of the shows that I hear, especially the cosmology-oriented shows, like Nishiyakaku. I really eat that stuff up, even though I don't always understand everything that something like...
And Dr. Kaku has a unique way of making things at least within the range of most people to try and understand or begin to grasp. It's a very difficult thing. I mean, talking about the things he talks about.
Yeah.
String theory. Try to explain string theory. Oof.
Yes. In layman's terms, he does a pretty good job. But I did want to take issue with something that I heard you say, I think it was about a week or so ago. And I was kind of disappointed to hear you say that.
What did I say?
You were talking to a caller about, I can't remember exactly what the context of the conversation was, but at some point it came to the, talking about the benefits of, capitalism and Wall Street and,
Oh, that was at the end of the program.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I remember the call.
Yeah, and you said that you thought, Wall Street was eminently worth defending.
I do, and I still feel that way. Very much worth defending.
But, you know, to me that sounds like a bit of a contradiction, because I hear you talking quite a bit about, how very strange things are getting environmentally.
They are.
Yeah, and I...
What you're not grasping is that I defend Wall Street and I defend capitalism as a system I live and thrive in, and I think that this system is rich enough to do the right things for the environment, and that's what I want to force it to do.
Well, I agree with you. It is rich enough to do the right thing. Unfortunately, capitalism is all too often practiced in an irresponsible manner, and I don't have any problem with it if it is practiced responsibly.
Yeah, but see, that's the problem with this is it's like trying to blame the guy who manufactured the gun for its misuse, which they're trying to do right now.
I'm a Canadian, and there's another issue that I take issue with. There's some of us here in Canada who like guns, but generally speaking, we are not big on possessing firearms, and we're not.
I know, but a lot of Canadians knife each other to death. Well, that's true.
We've got a much lower homicide rate per capita than you'd find in most places.
Well, that's because you're mellow people. You know, we are different. Canadians and Americans, while we have many similarities, let's face it, we have different temperaments generally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree with that. And I like a lot of Americans that I've met personally. But there is, kind of generally speaking, collectively, a certain mindset that exists. And I don't think that the gun manufacturer should be let off.
Come on.
When
somebody up in Canada impales somebody else with a knife, then shouldn't we go to that knife manufacturer and hold them responsible?
Well,
why not?
The problem is the easy access to firearms that you have in the United States. It's so easy for people. And, you know, a lot of people get angry and they make stupid, very short-term decisions about what they're going to do with their anger. And if they have access to a gun, it's far more likely that they're going to,
you know, do you know how easy it is to poison somebody?
Yeah, but
it's
easier to pull a gun out of a drawer and shoot somebody than to
poison
somebody.
No, it's not. You slip a little something in a drink and they're gone.
In terms of an instant explosion of anger, if you're having an argument with somebody, you're not necessarily going to have a vial of poison at hand, but if you have easy access to guns, you just might have a gun, easily accessible.
You might, and let's face it, there are guns in Canada. You and I both know that.
Yeah, but generally speaking, they're not as easy to come by. I mean, if you really want to get one, yeah, you can get one. But, you know, you can't go out and buy them just like that at a pawn shop or at a gun fair or, you know, whatever it is that, like, those kids in Columbine were easily able to get guns through.
Now, are you honestly telling me that a kid in Toronto, a major Canadian city, couldn't go get a gun on the black market if he wanted one? Tell me that.
Yes, he could,
yeah,
but I don't think it's as easy to do here as it is in the United States.
Yeah, maybe it's harder. That's right. Maybe it's harder in Toronto, but you can still get one.
Well, you know, if you're really bound and determined, yeah, I would say that you probably could.
The Columbine kids were bound and determined.
They were, yeah, but, you know, there were certain things that made it perhaps easier for them to access what they were looking for than it might have been, in countries where they have stricter gun laws, where like we do here. And I'm not saying it's the only reason why we have a lower homicide rate, but we do have a lower per capita homicide rate. But so getting back to the capitalism argument, I mean, I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with wanting to make money and have a good living, but if you do it at the expense of, the environment that you live in.
I don't disagree.
Yeah, but, well, unfortunately, I think that the mindset with Wall Street is we don't give a damn about that. We just want to make money. You know,
I believe that's changing. In America, we are now beginning to clean up our waterways. We're cleaning up our air. It's considerably cleaner than it was 10 years ago, guarantee you. In many cities, we're beginning to do a lot of good work here, and you know what it takes? It takes money, honey.
Yeah, but, you know, I think we'd be better off focusing our efforts on preventing the crap from getting out into the environment in the first place.
They are starting to work. That's what I'm saying, and it takes a lot of money to do that, and capitalism generates a lot of money.
Mm.
It does.
Well, yeah, obviously it does. But I take it that there's something wrong with the mindset in the first place.
Do you have a stock market up there in Canada?
No, yes, of course we do, yeah.
I thought you did.
Yeah, no, we're practitioners of capitalism. We also have a lot more socialistic kinds of things that happen here.
Well, you have very, very high taxes, but what's cool about that?
What's cool about that? Well, a medical system where you don't have to worry about not being able to pay for your medical care.
I'm hearing all these stories about long lines and...
Well, I'm not saying it's without problems. It does have some problems. A lot of that has had to do with funding cutbacks. I'm not saying that, healthcare dollars...
And you know why you're having cutbacks? Because your system is going broke.
It's not going broke. It's having some short-term problems that are – you're getting a lot of propaganda about that in the United States from your HMOs and your um, you know.
I'm not going to defend the HMOs either.
Yeah, I mean, from what I understand, you know, the per capita cost of healthcare is actually higher in the United States than it is in Canada. And believe me, you know, like there's a lot of people in the United States who, from what I understand, are not covered by any kind of insurance. A lot of people,
mm-hmm.
And you know, those would be people obviously on the lower end of the economic ladder.
And understand this: those people can walk into county hospitals nationwide and be treated.
Well,
yes, it's true.
But I've heard stories about people being turned away as well.
Well, I know, but there's a lot of propaganda, sir, that makes its way up north.
Well, but, you know, this is not propaganda necessarily. I mean, I've seen this kind of stuff. I've seen this on, like, Oprah, a couple of Oprah shows where she...
Well, now, let me ask you a question, sir. You get Oprah up there, huh?
Yeah, we are swamped with American media up here. We've got our own.
Well, do you think Oprah would have on a common situation or something that would be shocking and unusual?
That's a good question. I don't know for sure, you know.
Then you don't know Oprah.
Well, you know, I've got, generally speaking, actually Oprah doesn't deal with those kinds of issues. You know, she deals more with touchy-feely issues than she does with hard political social issues.
All right. Well, listen, I appreciate your call. I got to move along.
Okay.
But we are not in as much disagreement as you may think. Of course I defend the capitalist system. It's the greatest system in the world, and we are the richest nation in the world as a result of it. Is it perfect? No. Can it be improved? Yes. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hey, Art. How you doing?
Okay.
Listen, I've got one for you. I actually have three things, but I don't know if we're going to have time for all of them before you go to the break. Earlier this year, I was on my way home from work, and I saw something in the sky, and I came home, and I tried to call you, and I couldn't get through. So I called 800 directory assistance and started asking for the numbers for UFO reporting centers.
Yes.
And they gave me a number for something called UFO Navy. Have you ever heard of that?
Ooh, no, that's a new one on me.
Yeah. So can I give you the number?
Well, I'd rather not until I have an opportunity to check it out.
Okay.
Listen, obviously you have more, and I've got a break coming up. Can you hold on?
Love to.
Okay, stay right where you are.
All right.
Ooh, you come on like a dream. Each is a dream. Live life for everyone. You're 16. You're beautiful and you're mine.
Now, I'd love to dedicate this, but I won't.
Ribbon girl, oh, what a girl. I bet twinkle and shine. You're 16. You're beautiful and you're my baby.
Now, don't touch that dot.
You're my baby, you're my pet. We fell in love on the night we met. You touching my hand, my heart with heart. And ooh, when we kissed, we could not stop. You walked out of my dream.
Here's a nice little article. Chinese and North Korean leaders exchange cordial messages as China's foreign minister visited North Korea's capital Tuesday. Both sides discussing their relations and, quote, a series of matters of common concern, end quote. What do you think the two communist nations were talking about? I bet they were talking about us. Young lady, you're back on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
Okay, so there are a couple of other things that I wanted to pick your brain about.
Okay.
I know you're a movie buff. And,
I am, yes.
And I know that you also keep up on world events. So I have heard that in June, I think it was in June, that a group of French astronomers found something that really concerned them, and they were getting ready to go public with it, and in July... they were all killed in some kind of a freak tram accident while they were on their way to their observatory. Have you heard anything about that?
Does this involve the month of November?
Yeah, it does.
I have from about a half dozen different sources information that parallels what you just talked about.
Yeah.
Now,
I'm not
prepared to go to air with it because it would be irresponsible.
Yeah.
I have not found a way yet to confirm it, and I have not confirmed it, and right now it's only at the rumor level, but I'm telling you, it's ripping all over the internet. It's everywhere.
I'm calling from Denver, and I was just hoping that you could maybe confirm some of that for me.
Well, I'm not doing that.
You can't do that. Okay.
No, I'm telling you, I have also heard it from more sources than you have, but obviously it's not something for air yet.
Yeah. Just onto something lighter then.
Sure.
You're a movie buff, and
yep.
I was just wondering, there's a movie that I saw, I think it may have been a made-for-TV thing back in the 70s, and it had Elizabeth Montgomery in it,
mm-hmm.
and it was about a woman who was pregnant and had been impregnated by a spaceship, or a beam from a spaceship. And it's the most amazing movie, especially when I think back to the times that I saw it in. It was very advanced for those times, and I can't remember the name of the thing. I haven't seen it in the stores, and I was wondering if it rings a bell to you.
In this movie, was the young lady impregnated by a machine?
No. The only way that they knew that she had been impregnated was they took her under hypnosis, and some slick psychiatrist said, "How is this woman impregnated?" And this booming low voice came out and said, "By a beam from a spaceship."
You know what? I don't think I've seen that. So I wish I could help you.
Wish you could too.
The one I saw was a machine. It was really horrible.
Well, there's another one that's out now, and I think it may be a takeoff of this one called The Progeny.
Oh. No, I haven't seen that yet. Do you want to see that movie? Do you get pay-per-view?
Yeah.
Watch October Sky.
Oh, I've seen that on there. I was wondering if it was any good or not.
Take my word for it.
Okay, will do. And listen, you know those people that were slamming Terrence McKenna? I've got a bumper sticker on my car about those people. It says, "God, save me from your followers."
Thanks for the call. You take care.
You too, Art.
Right. Terrence McKenna is a good person. And because Terrence McKenna has experimented with psychedelic drugs, doesn't mean he's going to hell. And frankly, that's some of what I've been getting, and it's repulsive to me. I'm sorry. I don't agree with my earlier guest. I don't think that people who have worshipped Buddha or Muhammad or any one of the other religions that surround our world and are so common, but do not have the specific word that Christians have, are going to hell. The broad road to hell, I think he said. I just don't buy that. But I think it's valuable to have it on the air. He's definitely a fire-breathing fundamentalist Christian, and having that on the air is pretty good stuff every now and then. You need to do that so that you understand. Well, actually, it'll help you understand the Brookings Report when you read that. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm doing great.
Extinguish your radio for me.
What's that?
Turn your radio off.
Okay.
Wait till you do that.
Okay.
There, very good. Okay, now you're on the air.
Hi, am I talking to Art?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Art. It's taken me a while to call you. I had an experience back in August. On the Day of Destiny. And I actually heard about the Day of Destiny on your show.
What kind of experience?
I don't have enough time to tell it all to you now. Maybe I'll email you. But I went to the other side.
Oh?
What I've found out from different people that is it referred to as the fifth dimension.
You went to the fifth dimension?
Yeah.
How was it?
It was great. there's a lot of good beings that are here to help us.
Well, I sure hope you're right.
Yeah.
I'm not so sure about that. I wonder about that, whether they're really good or not.
Well, I mean, there's always, you know, everything is of God, you know. It's all one. But it's essentially, you know, there are beings that are here to help us. And even what we may conceive as being bad, you know, they're our teachers too. And that's the most important lesson that we have to learn.
Mm-hmm. Well, so no matter whether what happens to you as a result of them or God or anybody else is good or bad, it's a lesson. Schoolhouse Earth, that kind of thing, right?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. Well, I think I've got it. And congratulations to you on your visit. I've never been over the fifth, but I'd love to try it.
Well, I don't think we have that far to go before we all get there.
That would be an interesting trip for humanity. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art. This is Pamela in Seattle.
Hi, Pamela.
Last night you said something that's really not true, and I needed to call and correct you and apologize, by the way.
Well, if I said it was wrong, I should apologize. What is it?
That testosterone has nothing to do with the sex drive. That just targets certain body cells like muscles and hair follicles. It doesn't have anything to do with the sex drive. That's all in your mind.
Really?
Yeah, and it kind of does a disservice to young men who are struggling with their identity. And it doesn't mean you want to have sex. It just means that you have big muscles or longer bones or hair on your face.
But how do you know that doesn't contribute to the male sex drive?
Oh, I've been studying this for my 13 long years.
You're 13 years old?
No, I'm...
Oh, 13, no, I see. You're...
Yeah, remember, I'm not supposed to talk about that. It's a secret between you and me.
Oh. Now it hit me who you are.
Yeah.
Are you going to behave?
Yes, and I have to apologize to you, Art.
Well, I did ask you to stop, right?
Yeah, but see, I don't understand all that. I'm really... It just, you know, you can tell me something, and I won't understand it. I just can't understand it. No matter how much you explain it to me, what upsets you, I can't, you know, I went to my group, and I asked them, and a lot of them heard me, and a lot of them listened to you.
If you come on and incessantly every night talk about nothing but 12-step programs and alcoholism and addiction, then we're not going to get along, and I'm not going to be able to put you on the air. Now,
know,
that shouldn't be too hard to understand. You've got to try.
Well, every night you talk to people about it, and your show is just like a meeting. You know, people call in and give their opinion, and it's very democratic.
Oh, I know, but variety, my dear, is the spice of life. But it's so true,
and your show is so wonderful.
And you've got to have a little variety in what you discuss. That's all.
Yeah, and I gave you the list, but sex is at the top, see? And that's the thing that gives you nightmares.
Sex gives you nightmares?
No, it gives you nightmares.
No, it doesn't.
You told the ladies that it did.
No. You didn't listen very carefully. Thank you for the call. I never said that. I never said that at all. I said to the ladies that dreaming all dreams, perhaps even accepting sexual dreams, which... you know, they're okay. Other dreams are kind of busy, and when you wake up, you feel as though you've worked. You've been through an experience or an adventure, or you've been chased by a monster or whatever. And what I told the girls was that I would rather sleep the little slice of death that was advertised and then wake up refreshed. That's what I told the girls. I told the girls a lot of things I don't think they expected to hear. But never did I refer to a sex dream as a nightmare. Although, I suppose, considering some out there that I could consider it could become nightmarish, but for the most part, why your head takes you to good places. West to the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
Calling from Albuquerque.
Yes.
I have a daughter who lives in Las Vegas.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes. I said I have a daughter who lives in Las Vegas.
Yeah, I heard that.
Oh, okay, and she rides around in a helicopter a lot.
What is your daughter's name?
Can't tell you her name, but evidently there was an incident.
Does she do traffic reports?
No.
Okay.
But I guess last week
just flying over Pahrump and said to the pilot, "Oh, my mom loves that guy." And the pilot says, "Well, let's go say hello," and they buzzed her house.
So that's who it was. You know, pilots are constantly doing that.
And I scolded her.
They're constantly buzzing my house. Small airplanes and helicopters are doing that all the time. They think it's really funny.
Well, I scolded her soundly.
Well, we've got a 100-foot tower up there.
Yeah.
And so they better be damn careful is all I've got to say.
Right. That's what I told her. She promised not to do it anymore.
Thank you.
But that's at least one less.
Well, that explains a recent occurrence.
Last week, Tuesday, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know something I found out? I've got a KU band uplink here. In other words, I transmit up to satellite from right here at the house.
Uh-huh.
Actually, send a signal up to satellite. It's a rather strong signal, relatively strong signal. And when we have F-15s and 16s that come roaring over the house, my microwave KU band sets off their threat receivers.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. You know, like I'm arming to fire at them or something.
Maybe you should.
No. Don't say that. I'm just waiting for some person did the wrong button out there. Kaboom. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, my name's Shane. I'm calling from Sandy, Utah.
Hi, Shane.
I'm watching you on the internet, too. It's great.
I'm waving at you, Shane.
Hey, you know, I earlier when you were talking with the Baptist guy.
Oh yes.
You mentioned about people, scientists believing that maybe we'd reach immortality in the next 50 to 30
somewhere
50 years.
Between 30 and 50 years. Yes.
That's unreal.
It's real.
Yeah, I know. Well, I mean, I follow that nanotechnology and that science, and that is just so interesting.
You know what really annoys me about it?
Hmm.
I'm just going to miss it. I mean, I'm just barely going to miss it. I'm 54 years old right now.
Uh-huh.
And another 50 years, I don't think so. 30, probably not. So people are going to get to be immortal just after I kick. How unfair can you get?
That is right.
How old are you?
I'm 32.
So you might make it.
I make it.
You really might make it.
You know what I thought would have been interesting with him is I actually think this nanotechnology and this idea of immortality along the lines of science kind of fits in with religion. Because, you know, they say that everyone will be resurrected and will receive a body. Well, I mean, some religions believe in it. Of course, out here in Utah we do with Mormon Church.
Sure.
But that you'll receive a body that, you know, will have no sickness and will, you know, live forever and, you know, and all those things. And it'd just be interesting how that might fit in with, you know, the ideas of religion. You know, I mean, if you believe that...
I kind of ran it by the Baptist minister that I had on earlier, and he didn't seem too hot on the idea.
He didn't, did he?
No. Not at all.
I think it's fascinating. When's your next show about nanotechnology?
Oh, anytime. I just did one, as you know, on nanotechnology with Charles Osmond, and I'll do another. And I'm also going to have, at some point, Dr. Klatz back on. He leads a team of physicians who are looking into this whole question of immortality. They're doing the hard research on human growth hormone and telomeres and all the things they're looking at now that may soon result in much longer lives and then ultimately immortality. So I'll have him on again, too.
Wow. Well, that's great. I love your show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care. Wild Card Line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art. I've got a question for you. I heard the Best of Art Bell on Monday.
Yes.
And they had you had Speaking Wind on, and it said the late Speaking Wind.
That's right. He passed away.
What do you know when he died and what he died of? Or?
He had a massive heart attack, and it was it's over a year now.
Mm-hmm. It's really sad because I just heard that tape for the first time, and he seemed like a very...
He was.
Spiritual person, a very kind person.
He was.
And another question I've got for you is, are you going to have Ed Danes back on anytime soon?
Oh, yes. Ed will always, I shouldn't say always be back, because none of us will always be back, but Ed will definitely be back, yes.
Do you know anybody else that does remote viewing that you could have on as well, either with him or at another time?
Actually, the truth of the matter is I've had on almost every single remote viewer that was in the military program. I've had them all on.
Because, you know, I've been thinking about this a little bit, and I'm beginning to think that the remote viewing and your weather experiments may have some relationship in that remote viewing might be passive in some of those weather experiments you've been doing. If you get a bunch of minds together and push, it's like voltage versus amperage, like watching versus doing.
I agree.
I'd like to hear Ed's view on that, if he thinks there's any steps beyond remote viewing.
You know, isn't that interesting? I've actually never asked Ed about steps beyond remote viewing. That's a hell of a question.
Yeah, because I'm beginning to get a feeling that when a bunch of humans push in this way, that something could be going on, in which case, if Ed is predicting doom and a lot of people are tuning into it, it might actually create it. So it'd be interesting to ask him that to see what he thinks about that.
All right. I'll ask him about that. In the meantime, you're my last caller, so tell everybody out there good night.
Good night, America.
And Canada?
And Canada.
And New Zealand?
New Zealand.
Australia?
Australia.
England?
England.
Good night, sir.
Good night, everybody.
That's it, folks, from the high desert. We'll see you tomorrow night, and it'll all be different, as it always is, right here. From the high desert, once again, I'm Art Bell. Good night, Matt, wherever you are.